This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And extra, extra. We all are fired.
You know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. You gonna make someone around me catch up.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 2 of Clotheslines and Headlines, the only podcast to be listening to here at the Place to Be Nation for all of your modern wrestling needs across the entire world. Professional wrestling. I am one of your co-hosts, JT Rosero, coming at you live here on this Wednesday evening, and it's a very exciting Wednesday evening because we have a ton to talk about. It is an action-packed show. We have some great guests lined up, and we're covering a wide swath of news, notes, tales of intrigue, and tales of whatever, deletion, I guess. But let me bring in first one of my co-hosts, and that is, of course, the man from Wisconsin, and that is Stephen Willey. Steve, how are you?
I am good. I was excited because I still have some remaining gasoline from my earlier landscaping escapades.
Very good. Very good. Hope you hop on your ride on lawnmower and drive it here. If you leave now, you'll probably make it in time for SummerSlam.
That's actually a really good idea. I could use the time off.
I'd like you to look that up. I'm curious how long you'd have to leave to make it to Rhode Island on your ride on lawnmower. So when one of those go, like 7 miles an hour? So
there's an actual documentary of a guy who did that to visit his relative from, like, I think he drove from, like, Illinois to Iowa or something like that. This was about 10, 15 years ago.
Wasn't that the movie Forrest Gump?
That could have been it.
Oh, okay. All right. Speaking of Forrest Gump. No, that's an awful segue. Not speaking of Forrest Gump, I guess. I don't know. We're speaking of deletion in TNA. We have our good friend, of course, the third man in our three-man booth, the one, the only godfather, Mr. Nate Milton. Nate, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Senor JT and Senor Steve. I don't want to drone on, but I have a feeling I'm going to be fired up about a certain segment tonight.
I don't think there was a better way to start a Wednesday morning than I did today by watching that right when I got into work.
Oh, so great.
So great. We're going to talk lots about it, and we will be having Aaron George back to talk Final Deletion and TNA later in the show. Of course, I feel like we've all been hyped for it since as soon as Aaron hung up the last time. We were all primed for this match show. Very excited to talk about that. We're going to talk draft. We're going to talk Cruiserweight Classic. Talk some Lucha Underground. We have some really good guests coming as well. So why don't we first touch on the news of the day. And kind of in lieu of news, per se, is probably just the biggest story of the weekend that's coming up. And that is UFC 200. And to talk about that with us is, of course, the Cowboy. Cowboy Roger Morissette. Roger, how are you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Well, thanks for joining us on the car. Appreciate the dedication. And of course, you are our MMA guru here at the website, but there is one big tie-in to wrestling, and that's why we're going to cover this in depth here on Clotheslines and Headlines, and that is, of course, the return to the UFC of Brock Lesnar fighting Mark Hunt this Saturday night. And of course, this whole card is pretty loaded. We're going to focus on that match first, and then we're going to touch on Brock in his SummerSlam as well, SummerSlam opponent as well. But why don't we start with this, Roger? Tell us about Brock Lesnar versus Mark Hunt. Does Brock Lesnar have a chance to win this? What do you peg it as, and then what's your prediction?
Yeah, you know, he absolutely has a chance. I think, you know, the UFC is known for not matching guys soft. And Hunt's a real fighter. He's a kickboxer. He's in his early 40s. He's been around forever. He's been around since Pride came in with the, when they brought all the Pride guys over. Really was kind of under the radar and went on a little winning streak in the UFC. And at this point, I mean, he's probably the hardest striker in the heavyweight division. So one punch knockout power. If he hits you, you're going down. He's the master of the walk away knockout, where he hits the guy and then turns his back and walks away before the guy even hits the canvas, because he knows it's over. The big hole in his game is wrestling. So it's a real interesting fight. Basically, if Brock can take him down, Hunt probably won't be able to get up. So that's pretty clearly Brock's path to victory. Dana White gave him a guy who he can beat. So Brock needs to stand with Mark Hunt for as little time as humanly possible. Every second the fight is on the feet is another second that Brock Lesnar could get knocked out cold in front of the whole world. But I think it's a pick-em fight, honestly. If this was if Brock wasn't coming off the five-year layoff, I would pick him to win. Just you never know how a guy is going to react if he's a step slower. Hunt has pretty good takedown defense, and in order to take him down, Brock is going to have to get into his wheelhouse. So you're either going to have I think it's over in the first round either way. Either Brock gets knocked out cold or he takes Hunt down, and Brock's still probably the strongest guy in the UFC. So with him on top of Hunt, hitting him with those size triple X, you know, three triple XL hands, I think he would pound Hunt out on the ground. So it could go either way. Because it's a wrestling podcast, I'm going to pick Brock by first round, ground and pound.
Hmm.
So if he wins this fight, well, let me ask you either way. So if he wins the fight, what do you see his future being with UFC? Is this a one and done? Is it going to be tough to walk away? I don't know what his contract with the WWE calls for. I know like there was a thing in there to do a fight. I don't know if it calls for more than one fight. If he loses, is he done?
I mean, it's completely up to him. If he loses, he's done as a real top-of-the-line type of fighter. If he wins, I mean, he could very well fight for the title next just because – And I mean, it's a little bit undeserved because he's been out for 5 years, but I would give him a decent chance against either guy. Stipe Miocic is fighting Alistair Overeem, the guy who retired Lesnar, for the title. And Brock would have a fighting chance against either one of those guys. I think Miocic would be better. He's a little bit smaller, maybe a little easier to take down. But if he wins, I think if he wanted it, I think they would give him a title shot. It's not completely undeserved with the win against Hunt. Hunt's a top 10 guy. You have a built-in storyline with Overeem because Overeem retired Brock. Again, it comes down to if he wants it. If he loses, they'll still let him fight. I mean, he's a real cash cow for them. I don't think you could sell him as a legitimate contender if he loses this fight. So, but there's plenty of guys he could fight. He could have the third fight with Frank Mir, who's not a legitimate contender. And there's kind of a senior circuit where the older guys fight each other, and he could be part of that. My prediction would be if he wins, he figures out a way to continue fighting in the UFC, especially if he wins impressively.
I mean, at some point, too, does it benefit Van Vince just to keep, you know, if he wins and he goes on and, you know, gets a title shot or whatever else? I mean, I think it continues to get his name rebuilt in the world of wrestling. I mean, a loss, an embarrassing loss, is a very interesting situation for the world of wrestling because how do you continue to believably run this guy out there after he lost to, you know, you say he's a top 10 UFC guy, but in the fans' eyes or, in, you know, casual fans' eyes, losing to a guy named Mark Hunt that most have never heard of until they announced his name on SportsCenter is not going to really help his value to the WWE brand. So it's a risk.
No,
sure.
I mean, I don't know, Jen. I take a little bit of umbrage with that, given that, I mean, he got knocked out by a kick to the stomach.
Yeah, but they kind of had an Overeem. They kind of had the excuse, you know, the diverticulitis, and then he didn't come right back. I mean, right now, remember, he had been gone for a long time, so everyone's excited to see him back. Right now, he's been on this path, he's under contract, and he's been positioned as pretty unbeatable. Like, he hasn't really lost much since, you know, the initial matches that he had. He's been, you know, the ones at Triple H or whatever. Since then, he's been pretty much undefeated. So to have your guy who you pretty much had maul your entire roster for the last 2 years and make everyone look stupid, including John Cena, you had him destroy twice, and really three times if you count the Rumble. And then you have him go and he loses to not even the best guy in UFC. I'm just talking like embarrassing loss. Like if he gets knocked out cold in the first round.
Yeah, which is a real distinct possibility.
Right.
If he loses, that's how he's going to lose. Definitely. There's no way this fight's going to the cards or anything. I mean, neither guy has the gas tank for that, frankly. So, and if Hunt wins, it's going to be by knockout, and it would be by embarrassing knockout. I mean, Cain Velasquez really destroyed Lesnar with no excuses. I mean, kicked his ass. And then in his very next fight, I mean, he left the UFC on a two-fight losing streak, and I don't know.
I just feel like he wasn't in the middle of it, though. And Cain Velasquez's name value as well. You know what I mean? Like, I just look at the reaction when he was announced. And when Mark Hunt was announced, I was like, who? Mike Hunt? You know, like, no one even knew what the hell it was. Like, I saw so many people saying, oh, you know, they're giving Brock a tomato can. Like, until, you know, UFC, you know, knowledgeable UFC fans started stepping in and saying, no, you know, this guy's kind of legit. I just think that's the general perception. Like, losing to Cain Velasquez and having not been wrestling for 10 years is as different than being active, having just gone over everyone on the roster, including John Cena, your top guy, in decisive fashion, and then just go get knocked out in one round by, you know, what many people are going to look like as a no-name. I think it could hurt. Nate, how about you? What do you think?
I think that they would just not even mention it. Yeah. That's what I think. Former UFC heavyweight champion, Brock Lesnar. I mean, that's what you would have to do, right? Is just pretend like it didn't happen and
let Paul Heyman go to work. You know, that's what you got to do.
And I think
as wrestling fans, we're good at that, right?
Yeah, we have short memories. But I think the big difference with this, though, as compared to the last time Brock made his return from UFC and coming off of those losses, is we already know what the next step is. Before, we didn't know if Brock was coming back, when Brock was coming back, how he was coming back. We already know that he's going to be back at SummerSlam, and most of us assume that his opponent is going to be Mr. RKO himself, Randy Orton. And so when you already have this plan in place, I think it's a risk. It's a calculated risk. It's a risk that could pay off for the WWE. But at the same time, like you said, Roger, for those that don't follow UFC, like Mark Hunt is not a slouch. You know, he went 5 rounds with Miocic. He, you know, knocked Frank Mir off the planet. So this is a guy that could very easily, all it takes is one shot. And you know, you've got this image. And in the age of social media where 5 seconds after Brock gets knocked out, if he gets knocked out, people are going to have him on Twitter with the crying Michael Jordan face. This is something that the WWE is going to have to contend with.
And as someone who...
Oh, definitely.
Go ahead, Roger.
Well, I was just saying, I mean, Dana White didn't do them a whole lot of favors because you really could have put him in with anyone, right? And to put him in, I mean, for those that Nate, obviously, you see if that you follow MMA. I mean, Hunt literally has the best one-punch power in the whole division. And, I mean, how many fights have you had? He's got a head, he's one of those guys that you have to run over with a car to knock him out. I mean, how many fights have you seen where he's, you know, he looks like he's gassed and he just lands that one right hand and then just walks away? It's crazy.
Now, with the rest of the card, Roger, you know, I am not someone who follows MMA outside of, like, maybe the first 4 pay-per-views back in the day with Shamrock and the Gracies. So this is, you know, it's number 200. Sell me on this. As a non-fan, what, besides Brock is a draw for me as a wrestling fan, but outside of that, what's going to bring me as a casual viewer to go down to my local watering hole? And since I'm in Wisconsin, there's one pretty much in every street corner. It's like a Walgreens around here. To go and watch this fight.
Yeah, it's funny you say that, Steve, because I pulled the car over and I'm in a Dunkin' Donuts parking lot, which is our version of every street corner. So, it's the most stacked card in the history of the UFC. You have 4 fights that would main event most pay per views. So the actual main event: John Jones, Daniel Cormier. 2. Their first fight was good. Jones won. They won one. You know, 4-1. Big built-in storyline. They freaking hate each other. Cormier won the interim title while Jones was suspended for the multitude of things, the cocaine and then the hitting the pregnant girl and the car and running away. And Jones didn't look that good in his one return fight. He fought Uriah Hall and he beat him, but he didn't look like a world beater in that fight. Not Uriah Hall. I'm sorry. Ovince St. Preux. I'm sorry, OST. He didn't look quite as dominant as the normal John Jones. Daniel Cormier, to win the title, beat Rumble Johnson, who has looked completely invincible, and hit Cormier with some stuff that would have knocked like anyone else out, and then had a war with Gustafson, but beat Gustafson. And so a lot of bad blood. It's a great main event. Jones is really kind of the villain, if you want to go, you know, heel and face. But Jones is probably going to win the fight, but it's a great main event. You have the lightweight title fight between Jose Aldo and Frankie Edgar, while it's 145-pound division, while bantamweight, I'm sorry, again, while Conor McGregor's up fighting at 170, these guys have been patiently waiting. Aldo's the guy who McGregor knocked out in 12 seconds. These guys have fought once before, but, you know, it's two of the top 10 guys in the world fighting for that interim title. That would definitely be the main event on another pay-per-view. And then you have Miesha Tate fighting. She's the women's champion who beat Holly. She's the girl who beat the girl who beat the girl. She beat Holly Holm, who beat Rousey, obviously. She's fighting no slouch, Amanda Nunes. And if she wins, the perception is that she probably, provided Rousey's ready, will get Rousey next. So all four of those fights are main event quality, great fights. The rest of the card's stacked, too. I mean, literally from the, you know, I think Jim Miller's fighting Takanori Gomi on the, as like the lowest card on the whole, lowest fight on the whole card, which would, you know, that's a good fight, too. It's just, if you like MMA, or if you're interested in MMA and want to see a card that's just stacked from top to bottom, this is the card for you. And I would tell you to tune in tomorrow night as well. Rafael Dos Anjos is fighting Eddie Alvarez for the welterweight title. That's the guy who was supposed. Dos Anjos, the guy who was supposed to fight McGregor when he fought Nate Diaz, and that should be a great fight. And that's on free TV. So, Steve, get down to your local watering hole. Enjoy. It's gonna be awesome.
And then hop on your tractor and get to Bonehead. So Saturday night, Steve, and you can join us to watch UFC 200.
Hey, my dad moved to Wisconsin. He bought a tractor. I can do this.
Do it. And this day, right till SummerSlam.
Can't wait to retire into a big city.
All right. So let's switch gears really quick. Raj, give us your predictions for those fights. Who do you like in each of those?
Sure. I'll go. I'm going to pick Cormier just because I'm really not a big fan of Johnny Bones these days. That's a very much a pick with my heart. I'll pick Lesnar, takedown, pound him out. I'm going to pick Aldo in a really razor-thin 5-round, 3-2 type of fight. And then I'll take Miesha Tate by decision as well.
And how about tomorrow night?
Dos Anjos. Easy.
Okay. All right, so let's switch gears. Let's talk SummerSlam real quick because, you know, we touched on this on our last episode, but the rumor that came out over the last couple of days is that Randy Orton will be making his return and be set up as the opponent for Brock Lesnar. And, you know, if that's the case, does that pique your interest? Is it a good choice? I think in some ways it's a safe choice. I think it's one that, you know, if Brock loses, but, you know, it's not embarrassing where they can try and write it off. Orton is definitely, you know, he can easily be fed. You know what I mean? Like, he can take a loss like this. So it's a good way to rebuild Brock quickly over a name guy. And if Brock wins, well, he can still get a win over Randy Orton and move, you know, get his way back in title contention. I actually think it's a smart move from, like, a cachet building. I don't know how much intrigue there is to the match. I mean, it's a fresh matchup. If you look, you know, there's some history, too, if they wanted to tell the story. They came up together pretty much in 02. There's a lot there they can tell the story about. I think it would be a really good match. I mean, I think Randy Orton's underrated in the ring. So, especially, you know, when he works as a face. I think there's a lot here to like. I don't know if it's a ticket seller. But with SummerSlam these days, I don't know if it really needs to be. So, what do you think, Steve? Does this match tickle your fancy at all?
It doesn't tickle my fancy in terms of my personal viewing. However, I do think it's a shrewd move if they go this way, because if what Roger says comes true and Brock does get knocked out in the first round, it sets it up perfectly for Orton to do, you know, kind of an RKO, which is the wrestling version of a quick knockout out of nowhere, no pun intended there. And so it would be a way for it to kind of continue the story and build off of what happened in UFC and vice versa. If Brock wins, like you said, you know, Randy Orton losing is no big deal.
Right. Nate, what do you think?
I think that you're right in that this is the safe way to go. It doesn't exactly light my world on fire, but there is some storytelling potential there with them coming up together and never really having a big major feud against each other. And if nothing else, hopefully we get a spot in the match where Orton counters an F5 with an RKO. And that's something that you can write home about. But other than that, I think that, you know, either way, whether Brock wins or loses at UFC 200, this is a good way to rehab him if need be. And I think it'll be a much more fulfilling match than his Mania match against Ambrose.
I like that at this point in Randy Orton's career, the guy who he, I won't want to say stole the move from, but, you know, has borrowed the move from, you know, on Nitro, the thing to watch with DDP is how is he going to pull off the Diamond Cutter this time? Mm-hmm. And that's kind of what we're saying with Randy Orton. We saw, you know, with Seth Rollins with that sweet RKO at, I think it was WrestleMania.
Yeah.
And now, yeah, it'd be really cool to see him do it out of an F5.
Definitely. Yeah, I think it's a big alert to Orton into this match. And Orton's a guy, too, that can go toe-to-toe with Brock and be believable. So how about you, Roger, in your eyes? Do you like this as a potential SummerSlam match? You're going to be there.
Yeah, no, I love it. I love Randy. I think Randy will be pretty hot coming back, right? Usually guy comes back. He was pretty hot when he got hurt with the whole RKO out of nowhere thing. So I think they can be a good build. And Nate kind of stole my thunder there. I mean, anything's better than what we witnessed in Dallas for Brock.
Mm. Oh, yeah,
Justin.
For
so,
sure.
I mean, you know, that was terrible. I think Orton's believable and... Yeah, and I mean, I think that they can build it to where it won't be a foregone conclusion what happens in the match.
If Brock loses, they can definitely build it that way. I think if he wins, you know, they can try, but I think it's hard to expect him to come off a big win at UFC and then have them, you know. It's actually a tough spot for Orton to come back to, too, because to me, it's they can present it how they want. I think it's pretty much a guaranteed loss, so you're kind of killing his heat, but I think it's worth the sacrifice to Brock to get Brock. Sorry,
God, no problem. But I love it. I can't wait to see it. I hope it happens.
All right. So why don't we go ahead and wrap up this segment right there. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to have our buddy Hugh Little on with us. We're going to talk some WWE further. We're going to talk the Cruiserweight Classic. We're going to talk the draft and quickly touch on our first half MVP. Roger, thanks for calling in for the car. Go enjoy your Dunkin' Donuts, get some rest, and we'll talk to you later. And everyone else, we'll be right back.
Real quick, I want to let you this. I'm a huge fan of the new show, guys. Awesome, awesome stuff. It's great to hear you guys have great insights and a lot of good chemistry. So thank you so much for having me on.
All right, no problem. Thank you. Now we're going to let us back in where we blew out the lights. We kicked the windows in. And when the law showed up, they said, who's going to pay for this? Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
What's up, everybody? This is Kevin Kelly. Make sure you check out every episode of the Kevin Kelly Show right here on the Place to Be Nation, placetobenation.com. The Kevin Kelly Show. Every episode is a winner. At least we hope.
All right, everyone, we are back from break. Hope you enjoyed that first segment talking UFC 200 with the Cowboy. It was a lot of fun, and looking forward to checking out the show, of course. As we mentioned, we will be at Boneheads eating some wings, a lot of wings. We got to put down a deposit to reserve a table, and that money goes towards your bill, and we get a lot of the money to spend. But it'll be a good time, as always. Looking forward to it. But before we get to that, we have a lot going on in the world of WWE. Of course, the draft is coming next week. The Cruiserweight Classic kicks off next week. We're halfway through the year. Lots to talk about. And joining myself and Steve and Nate is our friend of the site from the Talking Sheet podcast, emanating from SheetSandwich.com. You can hear him every weekend, along with his buddy Les Moore and Celia Bloom. And, of course, that is Hugh Little. Hugh, how are you, sir?
I'm doing excellent, man. Thank you for having me on this show. I listened to last show and thought it was excellent, man. All three of you guys, I just enjoyed the kind of thoughts and just the banter. And, man, I just got to shout out my boy Nate. I love Nate Milton's voice.
It is magic.
Hey, I got the second best voice in the biz after a broken Matt Hardy.
Oh God,
appreciate that, man.
It is magical, yeah. That voice. You have to send you our Christmas special. You can hear Nate doing Virgil for 2.5 hours. That's even better. So anyway, welcome aboard, Hugh. Great to have you here. Like we said, it's a very exciting time for us, and we had a lot going on. So we're going to start things off with the draft, and then we'll move along from there. Of course, this is happening from the first live Tuesday Night SmackDown, which is next Tuesday, the 19th. You know, I guess I want to say a lot of excitement, but more, I think, trepidation. You know, a lot of people are already like, well, you know, we punt SmackDown weekly and we watch wrestling, and now we're going to have to watch it. And how much more can we take, kind of thing? Steve, I know you kind of feel that way, and there are others along those lines as well. Hugh, when you first heard that they were doing this, what was your reaction?
Oh, my reaction was, didn't they already do this already once? And, you know, back, you know, and did, I don't know. I think it worked out okay, but they eventually had to, you know, can it. So I don't know, man. Like, it just, it does feel like I have to dedicate a lot more time, especially with the two pay-per-views a month, man. It just, it seems to me, and I've, you know, you guys probably know, I'm not the biggest WWE watcher. So now it's like, whoa, I have two new shows, two pay-per-views. It's just a lot to consume for just the Raw and SmackDown.
And Steve, you feel the same way right there?
Oh, definitely. It actually stresses me out. I'm not even joking. Like, to the sheer amount of stuff that is out there, and, you know, independent, WWE, all the new stuff on just regular television, there's only so much time before, you know, most of us are getting older. We have some sort of family in some way, and, you know, we all got our regular jobs. You know, Brad isn't paying enough to make me quit my job yet.
I guess one thing I think that helps, I don't want to say saves it, but helps a bit, is the era this is happening in the world of, like, media. Like, the fact that, you know, it's on Hulu, it's on Sling TV if you don't have cable now, which is big for me. You know, I can go to the gym now, and which I couldn't do before, and throw it on SmackDown while I'm doing some cardio. Or, you know, at work or whatever, put it on in the background. Whereas before, like, you had it on cable, maybe a DVR, you know, a VCR, you know, something along those lines. Or you had to do, like, an illegal stream. So, I mean, at the least now, it's a little more accessible, right? So it's a lot. It's a lot. But at least you can watch it a little bit more in your own time. You can piecemeal it. Maybe you're working in the kitchen. You can throw it on. So, I mean, I think that they have that going for them. Now, it's kind of a backhanded compliment because in my mind, that means it's not must-see TV, right? Because I can watch it. I can watch SmackDown on Saturday and not really feel like I missed much, you know, and didn't miss it on Tuesday. So I think that's another issue maybe for another day, is the watchability of the program, or, you know, how quickly you want to watch it because you need to see it. I think that's one of the big issues too. How about you, Nate? What did you think? You know, you watch a ton with your work for the law and your stuff here at PTBN. You know, are you starting to feel the stress that Steve mentioned, or kind of the oversaturation that he was talking about?
Oh yeah, it's wrestling fatigue and WWE fatigue in particular. You know, and I think that when you got 3 hours plus an overrun, which I don't know why in the hell we're still doing this overrun, man. Don't give me 3 hours and 15 minutes, WWE, just so you can try to sneak me into watching Todd Chrisley. I'm not going to fall for it. But you got 3 hours on Monday, and then you're coming back to back with 2 hours on Tuesday. Nah, that's too much. And I think what's going to end up happening for me, and maybe for a lot of the listeners and viewers out there that want to watch more wrestling than quote-unquote entertainment, is Tuesday's going to be the show you watch live, and Raw's going to end up being the show you watch, you know, via the network or Hulu or whatever down the line. You know, you can get to it when you get to it. Because just going off of what Hugh had mentioned, you talk about the draft back in the day and the brand split back in the day, there was a distinct split. You know, you had your entertainment brand, which was Raw, and you had your wrestling brand, quote unquote, which was SmackDown. And I think that's very much what we're going to get this time around as well. And no disrespect to the Social Outcasts or to, you know, I don't even know what they're called, the Puerto Rican Boys. But I don't need to watch those guys. You know, give me the in-ring guys. Give me Owen, Zayn, so on and so forth. And I watch that live on Tuesday.
Well, one of the questions is, like, you know, does SmackDown being live Tuesday quickly make Raw relevant? I mean, there are times now where SmackDown when it was on Friday or even Thursday night, I'd want to watch it on DVR or at least buzz through it before Raw, because once Raw passed by, you're not going to go back and watch SmackDown. I'm curious really how separate they keep things, because, you know, once SmackDown comes on Tuesday, does Raw feel like, well, that's old now, you know, because we already saw another live show. So I am curious to see if there's a bit of a hangover there. So with that said, looking towards the draft, if you know, I wanted to kind of take this two slants. We can look at it one from like a kind of fantasy drafting perspective, big board kind of thing. And then also we can talk about what we think they're going to do, how they're going to break up these superstars. But you kick us off. So if you're drafting for either brand, whatever, Raw, SmackDown, and you know, you're in the pole position, kind of give us the top names on your board, like your top five guys that you're aiming for to get on your brand.
Yeah, absolutely, man. And you know, this, this is what I would want to do. So this isn't necessarily what I think WWE would do, but my number one, dude would be Shinsuke Nakamura. I mean, I just, even though I feel like the universe doesn't, they haven't really met him, you only need to see him for a few seconds and you'll love him. So I just feel like, man, that guy, he killed it in New Japan, and I just would want, he'd just be my first take. I mean, I'm biased maybe, but the guy just brings it. I love his style. I love everything about, you know, him and his just kind of his persona of, you know, his character and whatnot. But after that, man, I definitely would also choose AJ Styles. I might be a little biased towards the New Japan guys because I'm like just hardcore into that. But yeah, man, I like right off the bat, you know, Shinsuke, I would take, and then AJ for sure second. You're gonna get some, you know, good matches out of those guys right off the bat. And, you know, other than that, man, I would, you know, obviously I would take Seth Rollins. I would also take American Alpha, and I'd bring him up to the main roster. I'm about fun and all that kind of stuff. And, yeah, there's just so much excitement with that team that, you know, if you're launching a brand, you're going to want some new faces, you're going to want some old faces too. But I just feel like you need to bring some excitement, man. And, America Alpha does that. So I don't know. Those are a few of mine that, you know, I think I'd also love to take, Kevin Owens. You know, you need that heel. Another one that I think that would be a really, really great on the main roster is Nia Jax. I just feel like there's no woman wrestler on their current roster that is like Nia Jax. So I just feel like, man, she just brings such a cool new dynamic to the women's wrestling scene in WWE. So, yeah, man, those would be a couple of my choices right off the bat.
How about you, Nate?
All right. So I'm going to go against type here. And let's say I'm drafted for Raw, even though that's the show I will probably least be interested in. But let's say I'm drafted for Raw. All right. Give me Rollins off the top. Give me... I know. Some of our listeners are gonna hate this, but give me Roman Reigns off the top because I'm no fool and I'm gonna do what the boss wants me to do. So I got Rollins, I got Reigns, but I also want somebody to come up and be able to work with these guys and give me a different dynamic. Yeah, this is the entertainment show, but I also want somebody that's gonna come out here with a different intensity and maybe open some eyes. And you know, I'm gonna go back to my TNA fandom and call up Samoa Joe. Yeah. So I got Rollins, I got Reigns, I got Joe. I need some more fun. I need some more positivity. Give me the New Day. Because I do think, you know, whether it's End Zone Cast or the New Day, you're going to need that fan favorite kind of audience participation act on your show to get people involved and get people invested. And I like where he went in terms of talking about the women. So if he's going to go Nia Jax, I'm going to go with who I think might be the most compelling female performer in the company. Y'all know I'm a hugger. I'm bringing Bayley up to Raw.
So now who would you bring along with Bayley, Nate, to be kind of your top feud out of the gate?
Say Steve.
My top feud out of the gate would probably be somebody that would have great chemistry, but also be a credible person for her to come in and beat up the top, and that would be Natalya, kind of the crusty veteran that is almost doing what Sheamus is doing with this new era thing, but better, because anything Natalya can do is going to be better than anything Sheamus could do, just on general principle. So yeah, I'd have her in there with a veteran like Natalya, and really get her over, you know, not just on her character, which is great, but on her in-ring ability, which has just improved in the last couple of years.
I'll tell you, there's one guy you made happy with that roster, Nate. You're hired. That's Vince Ross story there for you. How about you, Steve? Besides, you know, if you've calmed down from the thought of Bayley, go ahead.
You know, and I want to give this a quick plug. Jordan Duncan's Rank and File, Ben Morse, Andrew Reich, and I did a draft recently, but we also opened it up to everybody, you know, from all organizations internationally. And the top guy that I picked, and I won it, by the way, it was a unanimous knockout decision. It was just like Brock over this Hunt guy. I picked Brock Lesnar for my first pick. And, you know, if you want, and I'm thinking business-wise in terms of what my brand would be in terms of, you know, I could easily pick my fandom, what I would want, but it would just be all cruiserweights pretty much. But Brock is going to be your most kind of money-making guy. You know, he is the draw. He's, you know, there's a reason that both UFC and WWE want him for, you know, for their biggest shows, for WrestleMania, for the 200th UFC, is because he's going to bring you that kind. And another guy who hasn't been mentioned, I would also, you know, Nate, I completely agree with you. I would have Roman Reigns on my roster as well, because you want someone to be out doing the media. And I think he's got an amazing look. I just think he's been written wrong. He's muscular. He's handsome. He's, you know, they chose him in Titus for those parenting PSAs that they did as well. And, you know, how much mainstream press can you work from that angle? So Brock and Roman would be my top one. Guy who we haven't mentioned, who I think is a must on any roster, is Cesaro, just for his sheer versatility. That injury that he had was kind of a fluke. He's not a guy who's been injured very much in his career, and he can work any style. He can work the heavyweight style. He's been shown to work the lucha style back when he was in Chikara. He can work Japanese, you know, kind of more of a strong style with his forearms and his uppercuts. So those would be three kind of main guys who are already on the main roster that I would get. I love the pick of Joe. He needs to be on the roster. He's already, you know, getting up there in age. He's a guy whose body, I don't know how much he's going to be able to take, how many more years he's going to be able to be active. On that line, too, I'm trying to – and I want Austin Aries to get a chance, but I just don't know how he's going to look on the main roster next to, you know, say Big E or a Wyatt brother. So I'm trying to think of other NXT guys who are up there. It's a little bit more depleted now.
Well, let's ask this, Hugh. You can start us off here too. Who do you think is going to benefit the most from the draft, from the split? You know, there were guys that benefited big time back in 2002 and 2003. Ones that probably maybe, you know, a guy like Benoit or Eddie Guerrero that never would have been world champion. JBL. You know, there were a lot of guys that benefited from that lack of depth on each show that got elevated up the card. Who do you see this time being like one or two of the biggest beneficiaries of the split?
Oh, man. You know, Steve actually mentioned his name. I think Cesaro, I think he could have a huge impact and get some titles, man. And like everything Steve just said, man, he's so versatile. I mean, just this great look. I love his whole, you know, the outfit in the tux, you know, the suit. I mean, just reminds me of a hitman. I just think that it's about time that we got to see a little bit more of this guy in the role that we all want to see him as, like a champion, you know, and just feel like they always put him in a tag team or put him with, you know, a group, and they just never, like, they never dedicate time to, like, hey, let's push this guy. He's amazing. So I think that I hope that Cesaro gets a huge push and just some limelight, man. He's great.
How about you, Nate? Anyone on your radar besides Cesaro you think can really benefit big time from this?
I got a couple names that I think could really benefit, and one name that I wish would benefit, but it's probably wishful thinking at this point. And the two names that I think are really going to benefit from the split are a guy that's already pretty over, but I think he'll be even more over and maybe even end up being the top guy on the brand, and that's AJ Styles. If AJ goes to SmackDown, I think he will have a good shot at winning a world championship, which is something I don't think he would have done. Like, I think he would have been stuck in this role of being the perennial bad heel. He would have been almost like this era's Roddy Piper. if the brand split had not occurred. So I think AJ is a guy that you could see take an even bigger step. And then also, depending on when and if he comes up, a guy like Finn Balor, I think, will really shine with not just his matches, but with the way he can connect to the audience. I think Finn Balor is going to be a big star when he comes to the main roster. And then a guy that I hope, like, I wish they would do right by him because he is so talented. And, you know, there's so many what ifs or what could have beens with him over this past year since he's returned. And that's Alberto Del Rio. Like, this is a guy that night he first returned, you heard the crowd explode when he showed up in LA, I think it was. And when he, kicked Cena in the head and won the U.S. championship, you know, he's a guy that he's not the greatest talker in the world, but he can cut a solid promo. He's not the greatest wrestler in the world, but he can wrestle a pretty damn good match. And I think Alberto Del Rio's those kind of guys that you need when you split your roster. And I hope they give him a little bit more shine, but I'm not going to hold my breath.
So two that I think could fall kind of into that like JBL-ish category, guys you never, you know, they're potential contenders, but probably never going to get a shot with the big belt as it stands today. Now, if they split the titles and they fill in two pay-per-views and they really go separate brands, to me, a Bray Wyatt and Rusev, like two guys that fully deserve a run.
Yeah.
I just don't know if there's room for them as things are constituted today. But now, if you thin things out a bit, the cream starts to rise a little easier. A guy like Rusev, especially, who's really connecting right now, and even Bray, who's lost a lot of weight and has some energy coming back and a pretty good feud with New Day. I think those are two guys that could really benefit from having less clutter ahead of them up the roster and finally maybe get that chance. You know, maybe if they can get away from like a Cena or from a Reigns and get onto that other brand where maybe AJ headlines SmackDown and, you know, then you get Rusev and Bray as like two of the top heels. Like that's a really fresh mix and they're out of the shadow of some of those other guys that have been clogging up the main events. Steve, what do you think? Anyone on your radar?
Yeah, I want to choose someone a little bit different and someone who's gotten a bit of a rub this year on two occasions. One was just past Monday on Raw, and the other one was at WrestleMania. And you know, I wonder if they're doing that to kind of foreshadow something, and that's Zack Ryder. You know, someone who is kind of back and forth between NXT and hopefully getting on Raw, you know, just maybe on main event. So he might be one who moves up. Not a guy who's going to hold the top belt, but maybe more of a mid-card to upper mid-card. Really, any of those guys of the Social Outcast, Epico and Primo, just for the sheer fact that they have two separate lineups, they're going to be getting on one of the main shows more instead of going for weeks without being seen on television. And then another kind of under-the-radar guy who hasn't been talked about for a while, I'm imagining that Itami might get called up if he is healed because, you know, he hasn't been on TV for a year on NXT.
I definitely meant
least.
Tommy Dreamer for a second. Tommy. I was like, oh, wow, you're going that deep, huh, Tommy Dreamer?
Yeah, Hideo Tommy. He has been gone. He's got to have been healed by now. And I wonder if they're holding off on him until the draft as a, you know, they're going to do some surprises.
Yeah, word is that he was back in a couple of weeks, so the timing may work out for them to have him come up there. Do you guys see anyone, and anyone can answer this, anyone that could get hurt by this? I mean, I'm trying to think. I mean, it seems like they're going to make room for more people. I don't think anyone's going to get hurt, really, like, you know, take a step back in any way.
The only thing I could think of from that perspective is depending on how, like, my theory is that they're going to bring up a whole bunch of NXT people over the next, with this draft and maybe after SummerSlam. And then after this Cruiserweight tournament that we'll be talking about in shortly is over, I think they'll be signing a few of those people and kind of refill NXT with that. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to contradict what I just said like a minute ago. The people who haven't been much on television, you know, like a Heath Slater type. I don't even remember the name of the Social Outcasts anymore. That's how long it's been since I've been on television.
I almost said Bo Ryan. Bo Dallas.
Bo Ryan.
Bo Dallas, those guys. If they get passed up again, I wouldn't be surprised if you see them just leaving on their own.
Right. I mean, a guy like Ryder is interesting because, you know, he has stuck it out. He's done everything they've asked. He went to NXT, teamed with Mojo Rawley. You know, we talked about this in the past, like a guy like Cesaro, who didn't pout when he was told to do things a certain way. He went, he formed his tag team with Tyson Kidd, and he kicked ass and made it work, and now he's being, you know, pushed again. So a guy like Ryder, who's never bitched, he's always hung in there, done what they've asked, this is when guys like that maybe start to pay off all the legwork they've put in, where they finally, now they kind of need guys like him, and he's having pretty much the best year of his career since like 2011. So, you know, that kind of dedication by hanging in can really pay off at times.
Well, real quick, you talk about who could be hurt, and yeah, we can't put the toothpaste back in the tube now on some of these guys, but I hope that this opportunity gives them a chance to bring up some more of the veterans that are in NXT. You know, guys like Joe, Aries, Bobby Roode, Eric Young, because the people that they have called up, and I'm thinking primarily people like the Vaudevillains, people like Baron Corbin, Apollo Crews, like they really haven't connected. And we talked about this on our first episode. Like, those are the guys I wish they would have kept down there and brought up, you know, the more established veterans, the guys that really are just taking up spots down there in what is supposed to be, you know, your developmental league. It's not supposed to be a separate brand competing with Raw and SmackDown. You know, I wish they would have left Corbin down there to get some season. Apollo Crews, million-dollar body, great moveset, but what the hell do we know about you, brother? You know, I wish they would have kept him down there so he could develop his character more. So hopefully we don't see a rush of young guys coming up, guys that aren't ready, in lieu of, you know, maybe bringing up some of these more established guys that made their name on the indies or made their name in TNA and giving them a chance to shine.
All right, so Hugh, now look at it like this, okay? You're Vince McMahon. You're diddling around with these rosters, and you're trying to build up your two brands. What do you think he's going to do? Does he stack Raw again, or does he under pressure now to actually make these things balanced? If you look at kind of the top of the card in his mind, he's probably looking, what, Brock Lesnar, Roman Reigns, John Cena, AJ Styles, I think. Rollins, Ambrose. Like, to me, that's probably his little top handful of guys. You know, how does he stack those guys up? Part of me feels like they're doing this Battleground Shield thing so they can go ahead and then split them and get them away from each other. But what are your thoughts on that?
Oh, man. yeah, you know, with it's hard to, like, kind of imagine what Vince is going to do, man, because I feel like he wakes up every morning and it's like, you know, something new. Hey, let's, you know, so... That's a real hard one to kind of to zone in on, but yeah, I don't know, man. I kind of feel that there's been such emphasis on the SmackDown. You know, we're moving it to Tuesdays. It's on USA. I just think that they're really going to want to put a little bit more energy into kind of rebranding that brand. Because I think SmackDown, you know, it's got a brand. It's got a following. We're all on tune. So I think he's gonna kind of know that SmackDown's gonna kind of do its thing, and I think he might kind of focus in a little more on SmackDown to kind of get those ratings up. Although, man, Raw ratings didn't look great last week. So
no, not at all.
So yeah, I have a feeling that there's gonna be a little bit more emphasis on SmackDown. The fact that it's also 2 hours, I love. So, yeah, man. But, man, getting inside of Vince's head is tough.
I mean, as a fan, you got to be rooting for SmackDown to have the, you know, the guys, right? You got to hope Styles, Owens, Zayn. You know, like, you got to hope those guys get on that two-hour show, and that's the show you're going to want to watch. So, like Nate said earlier, kind of the work rate show back in the day. Do they, you know, kind of mimic that? And to me, the biggest question is whether they separate John Cena and Roman Reigns. Like, how do they see them aligned? Do they keep them together, or do they break them apart? That's one of the biggest questions on the table for me with this whole thing.
I mean, but don't we kind of know that, like, they have that the two touring brands, and, you know, Roman is, you know, tours one or does one house show, and Cena does the other. I just can't see them going. I think they have to split them up because that's just what they've done.
Right. So the question there is, who are the, you know, who's kind of the 1A to those guys, right? So if Cena and Reigns are kind of your two top picks, or, you know, team captains, you know, then how do you whittle down from there? Like, you have to split up at least one of the Shield. You have to get them away from the other two. So the question is, who needs to get away, Nate? Who do you think of the three Shield guys, who needs the most to be alone?
I think what's going to end up happening is the Shield, they're going to keep two Shield guys together, and it's going to be the two that are the most compelling. And I hate to say it because he's our world champion, I guess. But to me, Brother Dean is the least compelling of the three. And so I think you keep Roman and Seth on Raw. You bring Dean over to SmackDown. Maybe you bring AJ over there and by proxy bring Cena over there. And those are kind of your linchpins on SmackDown. And then on Raw, you've got Rollins and Reigns kind of leading that show.
Yeah. I think you're on some. I think that's probably how it's going to go. And not only do they have to do the touring brands, they're going to have to support, you know, these pay-per-views if they are going to have two a month, one from each brand. So they're going to have to support those too. You got to have the names. And I'll be curious what they do with a guy like Brock. You know, do they assign him to a brand? Are they going to have floaters? So to me, I mean, I'm guessing like Brock stays on Raw. I think John Cena is going to stay on Raw too. I think Reigns and AJ Styles are going to SmackDown. That's my prediction. And I think Cena, once he's, well, I guess Cena and AJ are probably programmed through SummerSlam, huh? So you kind of have to keep
that
together.
That's the thing, because, yeah, they got to go all the way to Brooklyn.
I just can't see them taking Cena off Raw, unless they really want to establish SmackDown. Maybe they put him there. It's a tough one.
Well, yeah, I think the difference, though, Hugh kind of touched on it when he was talking about the USA Network, I don't think the stigma is there like it was back in 02, you know, when the whole big deal was Triple H didn't want to work on Thursdays. It's not a lesser network. You know, you're both on USA. You're both live. So I think the stigma, especially for a guy like Cena, who we know is a company man, if Vince, pulls him to the side, hey, pal, I need you to work Tuesdays, I think Cena's going to be like, yes, sir, and fall in line.
And Cena's got enough other stuff going on, too, where working an off brand isn't gonna affect him too much.
Oh yeah,
he's everywhere
at this point. It's not gonna hurt him in any way. Steve, what do you think of any of the guys in NXT that could come up? And we talked about ones that could benefit, but is there anyone you see making like the biggest jump? Or how about anyone that's rumored to be being signed? Like we just saw Tajiri signed a deal to come back. So any kind of name off the grid that we haven't mentioned yet that could kind of sneak up? I mean, you mentioned a Tommy, but anyone else you're thinking along those lines?
I think Hugh had mentioned this before for his picks, but at some point, America Alpha or The Revival are going to be called up to shore up the tag team division. American Alpha are just insanely popular right now. That could be a team that pops up, and we're going to have to see if they can get past the fact that they are young and experienced. I mean, Jordan's been there forever down in the NXT. He's been wrestling down there before they even made the transition to NXT. So his time has come. Gable, he's a little bit more green with the company. And I do think what's going to happen, like I said, is you'll see some of the guys, maybe Ciampa, Gargano, guys who have been kind of signed still on the indies. I think they'll be guys who maybe take the people's places on the NXT roster and get a little bit more play on the show. And speaking of Ciampa and Gargano, they are signed up to be in the first round of the Cruiserweight tournament. And we had talked about that we do have tonight, the tournament brackets have been released as we've been on air. And so we have them in front of us. Now, none of us have seen any spoilers. We're not going to talk any spoilers. And if anyone does spoil it for us, we're going to cut you. Literally, we are actually going to come down and cut you. That's why we have Hugh on. We've sent, addresses to him.
And a giant knife.
Yes, and a giant, absolutely giant knife, comically oversized. Have you seen the brackets yet, Hugh? And anything that stands out to you? Any guys? When we asked you to come on, you said you were super excited to talk about the CWC tournament. Any guys that you have seen so far that stand out to you?
Well, I mean, yes, man. I am so geeked out of my head about this CWC event. I feel like it's everything I've ever wanted in wrestling. Mm-hmm. It's got like a old school like Jean-Claude Van Damme blood sport kind of feel to it, where it's like these guys are different styles, different countries. So I love that intro that they did, and I just like, I'm a huge independent wrestling fan, so I just really hope that they let these guys do their thing, like do what makes them them, and get, like, even if WWE doesn't sign these guys. I just want them to kind of let them kind of do them and get some exposure. So, you know, whether they leave here or get signed, they have, you know, they got that experience. So I'm just, you know, first of all, I'm just kind of excited about that. But yeah, man, there's so many guys I'm excited about. You know, Damian Slater, Mustafa Ali, like I watch Freelance a lot, and you know, watching Mustafa Ali, like watching it on Freelance, like it's kind of grainy and it's, you know, you can't quite see. Seeing him in HD, I was like blown away. I love this guy's look. Another dude that just kind of stands out to me is the two Hong Kong guys, Ho Ho Lun and Jason Lee. Just the fact that we got some wrestlers from China in this is like blows my mind. Like I had never even heard about China wrestling. So I just really love that, you know, that WWE is actually reaching out to the corners of the globe and getting some of these guys. And I love the fact that, you know, I was a little skeptical of how much they would promote the promotions that these guys are in, but I feel like they've done it. They, you know, they've had some of progress matches on the network. So I just really love that I can trust them. They said that they're going to kind of, you know, promote the whole independent wrestling scene, and they're doing that. But you know, a lot of guys that I'm excited are some of the guys that I watched in early Progress, like Noam Dar and, you know, Zack Sabre. I'm super, and even like a new guy from Progress, Jack Gallagher, the guy from England. Man, there's just so many guys that are in this that like half the guys I don't know, and I'm just super excited to see and just learn from. And I, you know, it's kind of took me in a direction to kind of look up some of these guys, whether it be on YouTube, whether it be on Twitter, and ask, you know, hey, any matches. So I just think this whole thing is been pretty positive. I realize it's they're going to sign some of these guys, and you know, me personally, I'm like, oh, don't sign all my indie guys. you know, but I understand there's new crops coming up, and I kind of said this on last week's Talking Sheet, is that I feel like there's a lot of indie guys that are ready for that next step, and they're kind of just like they need to be called up to the big. So that, you know, that being said, man, who is not? I think the main man here is Kota Ibushi, man.
Oh yeah,
you know who. Everyone knows this guy. He, whenever he appears outside of Japan, it's a holy shit moment. So yeah, man. I mean, I could just go on for days. I'm excited as hell. I saw the brackets. I saw some of the matchups. I don't know if I, you know, can I mention some of the matchups that I saw?
Oh yeah, the first round matchups. Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
Just no winners. Don't pick the winners.
No winners. But I saw that Gargano is facing Ciampa.
You know, that was a match I thought might be the finals, you know, because the way WWE works, like, okay, here are the two guys that are most shown on TV. You know, I could have easily seen like a semifinal or a final match between those two guys.
Yeah. So, and I know like, you know, they work together a lot, so, you know, they can kind of trust them to kind of do their thing right out of the gate. I also saw that in the same bracket, Zack Sabre and Noam Dar are in there. And I mean, those guys just have had classic battles, through the years. So it almost feels like they kind of want to put guys that have wrestled together to kind of have some good matches. So man, I'm so excited about this thing. Like I said, it's everything I ever wanted. I love seeing different styles, different techniques, different ethnicities. I just love the mix of it. So I'm just really thankful that WWE actually did this. It's something new. It's something fresh. I'm excited. So, man,
it's shocking.
It's
shocking. That
it is. Yeah. So, yeah, man. I mean, please. I don't want to ramble on. So stop me.
Ramble away. So for someone that's not really kind of, you know, up on a lot of these guys, I'm looking through the names and I recognize a good amount of them. But for those I don't, is there anyone here? Now you mentioned a bunch of names, but like, who's the one guy for kind of a novice to wrestling outside of WWE? Say, like, hey, watch this match. You need to see this guy. You know, besides Ibushi, I know, obviously.
Yeah, no, I mean, I would definitely say Noam Dar for sure. You got to check out. He's just a professional, man, and he's so young. It's just crazy to see. One of my favorite wrestlers is in Evolve is TJP, man, TJ Perkins. Mm-hmm. I love that, like, kind of youthful, like, vibe and going on in the independent wrestling scene. So I just like to see that. But, man, I think TJP will really blow a lot of people's minds that haven't seen him. You know, it's just all these guys, you know, it's like, man, they can do so much in the ring, and the getting a chance to see that, it's going to be excellent. And then one other guy that I don't know much about, but I'm like super pumped to see is Lince Dorado, the Puerto Rican guy, flashy as hell, man. So, I mean, he just looks like he's going to fly.
He was a guy who, he was one of my, looking through this, I kind of picked like four names who I was so glad to see because of the fact that they've been around for so long and just never got their shot. And that's Tozawa, Tyson Dukes, yep, and Lince was one of them as well, and TJP. And Lince was around in more of the Chikara. He was kind of like an East Coast guy, but I hadn't really seen much of him. I know he was getting a little bit of play down and Evolve, especially in the Florida area. But I was excited to see him pop up in the introduction video because he's got a little bit of a new look. He is pretty flashy. He's not just generic. I didn't know he was from Puerto Rico originally. He has that kind of luchador look to him originally, like 07, 08, 09, but having a different style and rocking it. So it's going to be kind of neat to see some of those guys have a chance. Another guy we haven't mentioned yet, who I'm really glad is getting a chance, is Cedric Alexander.
Yep.
I've talked in more of our indie podcasts about how he just kind of been just treading water in Ring of Honor, not getting much of an opportunity. And it was very strange that happened. I don't know if they soured on him at some point because around the time of Royal Rumble 2014, everybody from Ring of Honor was like, Kevin Owens and trying to think who else, like the Young Bucks were really putting him over, like, wow, this is the future of the company, this is the future of the business. And then just over the next 6 months, he just kind of disappeared, and I really haven't seen him much on television. So he has kind of, like other guys, like Roderick Strong, is separated from Ring of Honor, saw that what Ciampa's been able to do on his own, and he's right in the tournament. And I think he's going to probably match up against Kota Ibushi in the second round, and I'm really excited to see that match.
And the thing I love, man, is this is a legit tournament. You know, this isn't, and no shade on these cats from back in the day, but this isn't the light heavyweight tournament. You know, they're not running out Scott Putski and S.A. Rios and Gilbert.
Scott Taylor.
Yeah, man. It's like, come on, man. Like, fool me once, shame on me. Fool me twice, can't get fooled again.
Well, if your baseline is Taka and Brian Christopher from In Your House DX, well, how many of the matches in this tournament are going to be better than that? All?
Yeah, pretty much all of them. But, you know, you mentioned two names in particular, and those are the names that, you know, when I first saw the list announced, I was like, okay, this is going to be their time to shine. And one is Cedric Alexander, who not only is great in the ring, but to me, he might have one of the best personalities out of all the guys on the list. And then also TJP, man, because anybody that knows me and has heard me on some of the other shows I've done, particularly Review and Impact, they know how much I hated the Revolution storyline. And one of the main reasons I hated it was because you took a guy, TJ Perkins, who is, I think he's in his early 30s, but looks like he's still in his 20s and can go and has personality and you put him under a mask and made him just kind of this generic henchman, this generic minion. And so, man, I don't think TJP is going to win it. I put my money on Ibushi. But, man, I think TJ Perkins has the potential to be a guy that stands out and shines. And it would not surprise me if he ended up being offered a contract by the company.
And it's interesting. Yeah. Oh, go ahead, Hugh.
I was just going to say, he got a lot of pop on that when that intro video.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. That was all I got.
And if nothing else comes out of it, just the fact some of these guys, and I'm not as familiar with the European wrestlers, outside of Zack Sabre Jr., I think most You know, most internet wrestling fans are aware of him at this point. Seeing that a lot of these guys are getting more opportunities already, just having their names associated with this, like you mentioned, Jack Gallagher earlier on. You know, he's already slated for the Best of Los Angeles tournament for PWG.
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
You know, I think that by getting on the network, it's something that these guys are going to be able to, you know, put on their resume and get a lot more bookings out of it, especially more of the international guys.
Absolutely, man. And I think that's a good thing for just – I love the independent scene. And when a wrestler can attach, you know, you've been on WWE, it just – it makes them that much more like people are going to want them on their shows and stuff. So I love that. It really has a feeling of giving back. I know that a lot of these guys are going to get signed. But, man, I do love that they're letting these guys shine. Hey, one thing I wanted to kind of, you know, I don't want – this is weird here, me asking the questions. But
no, go ahead.
But what did you guys think of Tajiri and Brian Kendrick being in there? It just seemed like the – you know, I was like, Tajiri, like, holy shit, he's still wrestling? That was like – that blew me away, man. So just seeing – you know, I don't know a whole lot about Brian Kendrick. But I just know, you know, I know that he's a veteran and stuff. So it's kind of, you know, to me, it is nice to see a couple veterans in there, you know, that wily veteran to kind of maybe upset a couple matches. But man, I don't know, just seeing Tajiri on the list has brought back some good memories.
Yeah, I think it's a smart move because not only do you have, you know, a veteran in there, you know, because, you know, as great as these guys are, there's probably going to be some nerves. You know, because for a lot of them, this is their biggest stage. So, you know, being in there with a guy like Tajiri or a guy like Brian Kendrick, who's, you know, been in that WWE system, that can calm them down. But also for the viewers, it's name recognition, you know. And so if I'm somebody that doesn't know the first thing about 90% of these guys, but I'm like, you know what, man, I used to love Brian Kendrick or I used to love Tajiri and I see his name pop up, that might draw me into watch this classic.
So a guy like Tajiri obviously is cool too because he already re-signed. So I mean that's, you know, that's a nice, you know, get too to help fill out some of the rosters. Kendrick was active, right, a little bit on NXT, and was he training too down there?
But he had a couple training.
Yeah, he had a couple matches, and then he also was really working with Ava Marie to to get her going. So I thought that was maybe a little bit of a thank you to him, to give him. You know, he's not very active in terms of wrestling. He's also weird as heck too, if you ever hear him talk.
I mean, I would guess he'll probably go a couple rounds here just to get the name. I think some of these name guys are probably going to go on and then be built up for, you know, to put over guys in a big way before you get to the later rounds. I'm excited to see Cedric Alexander, one of my favorites from Ring of Honor, you know, during his teaming with ACH and stuff. So it's cool to see him get the chance here. Some names too that pop up that, like, I feel like I've heard forever but don't really know much about, like Tyson Dukes. You know, like that's a guy I think I've seen his name around the internet for like a decade, you know.
Yeah,
probably have. And here he is popping up and I'm like, oh, I can, you know, finally really see like what this guy's about. And I'm still like trying to grasp everyone on this list. Like even Daivari, is that the Daivari? Or I know there's another Daivari out there, right?
It's his brother.
Okay.
Yeah.
His younger brother.
Okay. So so the main veterans that they brought in really that WWE fans will be familiar with are pretty much just Tajiri and Kendrick, right?
Tajiri, Kendrick. Yeah, I would say so. You're maybe TJ Perkins, if you know, if you're watching TNA for a long time. So. Ciampa and Gargano if you're already an NXT fan.
All right, so real quick around the table before we wrap put the bow on the segment. Hugh, who do you want to win and who do you predict to win?
Oh man. Well, I predict that Kota Ibushi will win, but I want Noam Dar to win.
How about you, Nate?
Ooh. Oh, I want either Cedric or TJ to win, but you know what? I was going to go with Ibushi, and if I'm putting money down, I probably should go with Ibushi, but I'm going to go with the upset here. I'm going to go with Zack Sabre.
Nice.
And Steve?
I think Ibushi's going to win. I kind of want him to win. I see him and Sabre matching up in the finals because they're on opposite sides of the bracket. Of course, it's WWE, so they might switch that around at some point. But who I really want to win is Ciampa because he gave up his spot in Ring of Honor to take a chance and you know, I think there are some people who thought he was, you know, it was ridiculous that he did that. But since, in the year since he's left, I've seen him, he's relocated to the Midwest. I have seen him live for Ring of Honor, Chikara, Global Force. You know, he's had a couple matches in TNA. He's been on NXT. He is like the indie wrestler right now, in terms of a guy who travels everywhere. Mm-hmm. So it will be really cool to see that pay off for him, because he could have gone nowhere, because he is not, was not a name guy in Ring of Honor.
All right, so let me ask you this, Steve. We'll start with you, because it'll transition us to our final topic of the segment. And that is, will the WWE match of the year come from this tournament?
Ooh. If it's Ibushi and Zack Sabre Jr., I think that's a dream match. And I think that could happen. And I think that there might be something that happens in the semifinals. And this is just a wild guess. Mm-hmm. That's at least going to be a match of the year candidate. I have no idea who that's going to be, but something's going to come out of there, because these guys are going to, especially the ones who are going for a contract or trying to get more recognized, they're going to let it all hang out. They're going to go all out in order to impress.
How about you, Hugh?
You know what? I feel like if WWE gives them the opportunity, they absolutely could have them I'd say at least a dozen of these guys could have match of the year potential. That is if WWE lets them kind of do their thing. But man, I don't know, man. It's going to be hard to beat. Like there's been some good, great matches already. I can't really say, man. It's a tough one for me, because Steve just said, Ibushi versus Zack Sabre. I mean, that could be insane. TJP versus Kota Ibushi. I mean, that could be insane. So yeah, easily a lot of these guys can put down match of the year matches and have in other companies. So yeah, man. I think if WWE lets them do the thing, the main roster, they're going to be on their toes, man.
How about you, Nate? What do you think?
You definitely will have some match of the year candidates, especially from a technical standpoint, but I don't think we're going to get our match of the year from this tournament just because of that. I think part of what makes a match of the year a match of the year is the story and the emotion behind it. And I don't know if they are going to be able to tell that through the tournament. Yeah, you'll have some really cool matchups, and you'll have a really cool story for the winner. But I would lean towards something with a little bit more history behind it. Like, even coming up this summer, like Styles and Cena at SummerSlam, like in Brooklyn, in that atmosphere. I think that might be a better, quote-unquote, all-around match than anything we get here with the Classic, even though I'm excited about the Classic.
Nate, you're such a buzzkill, man. I'm so excited. I'm so jacked right now talking to you. Like, no one wants to talk this tournament because they don't know a lot of the guys. Ugh.
So you're saying you were excited, and then I deleted your excitement, brother Steve.
But it's not final. It is not final. It will come back.
Oh, boy. All right, Nate, then what is your match of the year so far? What does one of these things have to do to take that down? Like,
I hate to say it, man, because I don't hate to say it, man, because I think this guy gets a lot of flack and a lot of guff.
Just like his jacket.
But Roman Reigns, AJ Styles. What was the first matchup? Was that at
Extreme Rules, was it?
Extreme Rules.
Yeah, whatever the first one after Mania was. I know they flipped him back and forth.
Yeah. But that first Styles Roman Reigns matchup. Yeah, like yeah. I thought both guys went out there and put on a hell of a show.
What do you think, Hugh? What's your match of the year from WWE? I know obviously worldwide there's a lot of contenders, but just from the main company here.
Man, I loved Nakamura's first match. It just felt like there was this like anticipation for weeks about him showing up and what his music's going to look like, sound like, what is he going to look like, what's he going to wear, and all this kind of stuff. And the excitement in that arena that night was palpable through just the TV. So, man, and kind of like what Nate was saying, man, there was a story. So it just kind of built up into this, whether the match was just like, I feel like it was a great match. I don't know if it was match of the year, but the story helped it, I feel, be this whole like holy shit moment. We've got like Nakamura's in the WWE. Mm. What is going on in the world?
What is this on my screen?
So besides Shane McMahon and Undertaker, Steve, what is your favorite match?
Oh, my God. That was legit. I don't know if I've said this on a podcast, but we had a kind of a mini WrestleMania party for my birthday. And just kind of like a reunited or a reunification of a bunch of my wrestling friends from the 90s and the Attitude Era. And we lost people during that match. People actually fell asleep. let's see. Roman, AJ, I think, is the number one. I'm trying to think of something besides the two that were just said. I would go back and forth between the Reigns, AJ, and Shinsuke Zayn. And I would lean Shinsuke Zayn just because Zayn's my guy. So, I would watch that. I've already have watched that again just because, he's someone who I really root for. Kind of a maybe an under-the-radar type pick would be American Alpha versus Revival from NXT. If you want to see, a WWE tag team match that you haven't seen on the main roster, if you want to see what it can be done like, that would be one I would look for. That's more to pick something different than what everyone else said, though.
Yeah, those three are up there. I think it's shows grossly the really misuse of Brock Lesnar. I mean, this is a guy that's been delivering match of the year, at least candidates for the last few years, that he's not even like in the conversation so far in 2016. Mm-hmm. Just shows like the gross misuse of him thus far. I love that AJ Reigns match too, and I think that takes us right into our final topic here, and that is the first half MVP in the WWE. To me, I think it starts and ends with AJ Styles. Like, he came in, made a big impact, no pun intended, in the Royal Rumble. Big pop, dramatic moment, looked great. Had the series with Jericho to kind of get his feet wet. Yes, he lost at Mania, but you know what? The series itself made sense. They had the fun stuff where they teamed for that week. They made the shirts and everything. I thought it brought some of the best work of Jericho in like years out. I thought he was excellent as the heel in that feud. And then his matches with Reigns were like tremendous. And then his heel turn on Cena and the match, we went into it in depth last week, so we won't do it again. But the match with Cena, their first one was so different and well executed. And the fact that he hasn't missed a step, he didn't do, he didn't have to go to NXT. He just came right in. Not that he belonged there, but he came right in and immediately was presented like a star and feels like a star. And he's been used as a star. And very few guys can say that with Vince McMahon, that they came in from spending a lifetime in other promotions and came in, were giving like full star treatment. And I mean, he's one of them, one of a few. And to me, overcoming what potential roadblocks are in the way, his quality of match, his promo work, his heel turn, and the teases in both heel and face turns, to me, make him a clear choice. I think Reigns is on the list somewhere in there, but I don't think anyone touches Styles right now for that company as far as in ring on biggish events week to week. How about you, Steve?
Man, you stole my thunder with Reigns a little bit because I think that he gets lost in everyone's hate that he has two great matches with AJ Styles plus the three way at Fastlane with Dean and Brock. I think it's a no-brainer with AJ Styles at this point. And even if you look outside of the WWE, if you're talking, wrestler of the year, all around the world, he also had a match with Zack Sabre before he came in. He had the match with Shinsuke at the big Tokyo Dome show for New Japan. Again, I think maybe not 2015, but 2014, he was a lot of people's wrestler of the year. But this is kind of a no-brainer these first 6 months of the year.
How about you, Hugh?
Oh man, totally, it's AJ Lee in my books. I mean, I'm glad
AJ Lee.
AJ Lee.
It's a Freudian slip.
I want her back.
She's in the Cruiserweight Classic.
AJ Styles, man, and I'm glad that Steve, you gave Roman a little love right there. Because he definitely is in the mix. But with AJ, you guys kind of said a lot of what I would have said already. He was having great, 5-star matches in New Japan. I mean, even during the G1, which is one of the grueling tournaments out there. So he was just killing it there. He immediately came in and yeah, a lot of guys can kind of get lost, or maybe Vince doesn't really love. And the fact that, you know, he's somehow pushed through it. And maybe it is Vince likes him. I feel like, you know, he's put on some great matches. He's got this like put together vibe to him. Like, this guy's a professional wrestler, like, down to the friggin' gloves, you know? So I love that. And, you know, let's not, he's also kind of brought in, that the whole Bullet Club kind of thing, not even though it's not Bullet Club, with Gallows and Anderson, and, you know, just kind of, you know, easing those guys into a storyline. That I don't feel like that was as easy as it's kind of been. And I think it's been he's kind of transitioned them. But, man, a lot of the matches he's had this year, you know, outside of WWE and inside of WWE, I mean, he's right up there with, you know, Wrestler of the Year in my book all around. I mean, the only other one is maybe Chris Hero in my book. But, yeah, AJ's got to be the MVP of the first half of WWE and everywhere, the whole world.
Clean sweep, Nate.
Yeah, let's go ahead and make it unanimous like Steph Curry, with honorable mentions to both Roman Reigns and also John Cena, who I think, you know, we see every time this guy goes out, whenever he comes back, things kind of pick up a little bit. You know, he adds a lot to, especially those 3-hour Raws, man. But AJ is the MVP, and for all the reasons you guys have stated, but, you know, this is a guy that is 39 years old, has battled injuries, but still consistently puts on great matches week after week. He's somebody that could have very easily been squashed by the WWE machine, and I had my worries early on. You know, he kind of stumbled a little bit, and I don't know if they had the grasp of the character, and I was getting worried that they were just going to turn him into Southern Fried Evan Bourne, but they got over that, and AJ Styles has consistently been the best thing about WWE for most of this year. So AJ Styles is my MVP.
All right, well, we just packed a lot of WWE talk into about an hour. So, Hugh, we want to thank you so much for taking some time to join us tonight. We're definitely going to have you back. And next time we'll let you talk a little New Japan. We'll bring Chad Campbell in, and you guys can go at it and talk that, you know, till you're blue in the face. But we want to thank you for stepping into some WWE talk, talking the Cruisers and the draft as well. Do you want to take a moment to just plug anything you got going on?
Yeah, man. You know, first of all, thank you. And, you know, Steve, thank you for being just as excited about the Cruiserweight. I can sense that. So I love talking this. So it's good to talk to another brother about it. But yeah, man, you know, every Saturday, we record Talking Sheet, with Les Moore and Celia Bloom. And on Twitter, Les is at Pro Wrestling, and Celia is at Celia Bloom. I'm at Hugh Little Sheet on Twitter. And we also have, you know, Facebook Sheet Sandwich, the website Sheet Sandwich. So a lot of good stuff coming up, going on. And, man, every week, man, I'm just trying to learn, you know, I'm just trying to learn more. I don't, you know, I'm still kind of new to all this. So it's just, it's been a blessing. It's a wild ride to kind of enjoy wrestling and learn wrestling. So, I mean, I'm just loving everything about my life right now with wrestling.
And I had to try real hard not to call you Hugh Little Sheep by accident because I was looking at your Twitter when I introduced you. So there you go. All right, guys. Why don't we go take a break? We'll come back. We're going to have Glenn Butler joining us. We're going to talk about Lucha Underground. Of course, their big show coming up as the season is nearing its end. And then still to come, Brother Nate. This is the final deletion, but we'll get to that in a little bit. First up, let's hear what's going on in the world of the Place to Be podcast. We'll take a break. We'll be back.
Slow down. Here tonight could be going to one chance. So I speed through life like it's no tomorrow. Speed it.
Place to Be Nations, Justin Rosero here. In addition to the Kevin Kelly Show, we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaceToBeNation.com. And we now offer them to you on two great feeds as well. On the Place to Be podcast feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast, with our famous Vintage Vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with clotheslines and headlines, main event, Mission Indie Possible, in our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on WWE, NXT, and Ring of Honor Super shows. Relive Wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse and the Dangerous Alliance Wrestling Podcast as we dive into various subjects in the form of exercises and games. We also have sports cover too with the Sports Lounge, the TJ McClun Show, and NBA Team Podcast. On our brand new PTB Pop podcast feed, we offer great shows such as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both feeds on iTunes and be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All these shows are available on PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to check out on the right-hand side of the site for details on how to support the site when you shop at Amazon and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, and Scott Keith's Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome back to the second episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. I'm Steve Willey, here with the Godfather, Nate Milton, JT Rosero. And we have on our next guest, one of my favorite guys. As I've said on other podcasts, I cannot do a podcast unless Glenn Butler is a guest on it with me. So Glenn from Connecticut, how are you doing?
I am good. I am super glad to be here.
Super
glad to be here with you here at the end of all things.
Spectacular!
Yes! Thank you! Thank you! Yes!
And Glenn, of course, is the host of the Glenn Butler. Man, I'm going to blow it now that Justin got it right. The Glenn Butler Hour Spectacular.
Oh, God, terrible. The Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular.
I stumbled because I was going to say Power Hour. I was going to say Power Hour Spectacular.
Awful. With Gordon Solie?
Yeah, exactly. You got it, Nate.
Occasionally, it's been an hour of power. Usually, it's been like more like three.
Yeah, I just spent a week listening to the holiday tournament one. That's how far behind I am. But it was great, even though you guys made me cry many, many times. I still enjoyed it. And I can't even like bitch about it now because it's so, you know, so old.
7 months old.
I'm shaking my fist in the yard. Damn you, Steve Willey. How do you guys not know what Just Friends is? You know, so whatever. It is what it is.
Well, the reason we have Glenn on today, man, so can we even find that? Yeah, that would be on the PTBN Pop feed.
Yes. Oh, it's there. It's there.
You can go and relive the holiday tournament. The reason we have Glenn on this evening is to preview Lucha Underground's big end-of-the-year finale, Ultima Lucha Dos. And it seems like this year we're getting a three-week extravaganza. At least 3 hours, perhaps four. And what we're going to do is just kind of go run down the card. There's eight matches that have been announced. Some with, I would say, more fanfare than others. Glenn, anything before we get into the card, anything for you that you've been a guy who's watched, I believe, the second season? I don't think you've watched the first season, correct?
I watched the last six or seven episodes of the first season. I picked it up late.
Okay. Any general thoughts going into Ultima Lucha? And the reason I ask that is that it feels like with Lucha Underground, people either love it or hate it. There are some people who are really turned off by the supernatural stuff, the backstage interviews, the backstage little sketches.
Yeah, definitely. And I find that a lot of the things that people complain about in some quarters are the things that I really love about it. Because I love the fact that Lucha Underground is a wrestling show that embraces the medium of television and isn't like trying to be a sportscast like so many other wrestling shows do. You know, it really embraces the power of cinematography. It looks like an honest-to-goodness TV show. It embraces editing. It embraces bringing in like actual actors. I think the guy playing Dario Cueto is actually from telenovelas, and it shows. So it's really embracing what you can do in the medium that a lot of wrestling shows don't.
Yeah, exactly. And they're hit or miss, some of the sketches backstage. But what I do like about it, and there's one match, the Trios match I'll talk about later, that those backstage segments fed into the storyline, and they fed into what you saw in the matches, and it started in episode one of this season, and it will finish, you know, at Ultima Lucha, which I think is a really solid form of, you know, of long form storytelling that, you know, this, I believe the season started in January, and here we are in July, and it was just kind of a slow burn of everything. And they don't show every player each week. They don't need to. They only have an hour of time to fill. So you really don't get oversaturated with seeing, you know, Roman Reigns, as we talked about earlier this evening, you know, having to see him in multiple segments and over the course of, you know, 2-3 times a week. Justin,
yeah, they,
oh, go ahead, Glenn.
Oh, I was just going to say they can really cycle through people because they have, for a one-hour show that runs about half the year, they have a really big roster. So they have a lot of people that they can kind of cycle in and out, and they're pretty good at balancing the people that you see at any given point in the year and balancing storylines. So within their like limited season compared to other wrestling shows, not compared to other TV shows, they kind of ebb and flow and have some things that climax, you know, in the middle of the year and late in the year, and then you start the build to Ultima Lucha.
Absolutely. And I was just going through really quickly through the card, and I see 11 people who were not from last season. One who was kind of a background character, but 11 people who will be wrestling who were not around during Ultima Lucha last year. And last year wasn't a calendar year either. That was, I would say, kind of September-ish is when they finished off. So I will run through the card match by match. I want to bring Justin in a little bit as well to get his takes on it, as someone who is a newer viewer to the program. Kind of the what I would call the undercard matches, they didn't really give a card order per se. The first one would be Ivelisse versus Taya. Ivelisse recently separated from her trio team after Angelico, which I don't know if that was a storyline injury or he had gone back to Mexico to wrestle, separating from Son of Havoc to be more of a singles competitor. Taya, who was brought in as Johnny Mundo's second. Glenn, any thoughts on this one? It seems like it's going to be kind of a throwaway match.
It might seem that way. I think they've done a pretty good job, like, simmering this feud, kind of building it up, you know, little bit by little bit until finally deciding last week, I think it was, that they would actually have the match. So I'm sure it'll be a nice little match. Ivelisse, I think, really, really impressed in her trios team. I'm not sure how well she'll do in singles, but I'm hopeful.
Yeah, and she's a huge fan favorite as well. Taya's, you know, I had not heard of her. She's trained by Lance Storm. I did not know who she was before she was introduced into Lucha Underground. I know she was wrestling down in Mexico for a while, but really has gotten a lot of heat pretty quickly from the Lucha Underground fans, who are, I think, is a group that are far better fans than, and this is my hot take, trademark Brad Woodling, hot take of the night here. I think there are a lot better fans than your NXT fans or your Impact Zone fans who, you know, are seeing the same product over and over and over again over a couple of years. I don't know what you think about that, Glenn.
I'm not as tired of the NXT crowd as other people are, but I get it. Lucha Underground, I think, benefits, again, from having the shorter season, so they're not getting the crowd kind of getting lost up their own ass after a while.
Right. Okay, second match. And this is one we're not going to really be able to talk about much because one of the people hasn't even been in the ring yet over 2 years, and that's Dragon Azteca versus the debuting Black Lotus, who has been in many backstage segments with Dario Cueto. She's now been called Dario's bodyguard. This is a match that has more of that backstory of the tribes in it. Glenn, do you mind explaining a little bit of what's going on there?
Wow. Well, off the top of my head, Dragon Azteca blames, oh gosh. Dragon Azteca Sr. was killed, right?
Correct.
And Dragon Azteca Jr. wants revenge, and Dario is kind of pointing him toward Black Lotus. Although he suspects that Black Lotus is not the party to blame.
Yeah, I think that's pretty good. But the thing which I frown upon with Lucha Underground is that the announcers don't seem to know any of the things that go on in these sketches. There seems to be this separation, which is odd because you would think they could, even if they didn't know what was going on backstage, you think they could watch the television show themselves? But there is that separation there.
Speaking of the announcers real quick, one thing that bothers me, Matt Stryker's heavy leather coat. How does he sit there in that place with that big leather coat on week after week and announce these shows? I'd be so uncomfortable. For whatever reason, whenever I see that to open the show, it drives me nuts that he has a stupid thing on every show.
Hey, man, looking cool has its price.
I guess so. It's weird looking. It's like the one Heyman used to wear stomping around the ECW arena. I don't know. It just looks very heavy.
Although you got to think that no matter what he's wearing, he would look cool sitting next to the potato.
Yes, very, very true. I do like the band, too, by the way. The house band is one of my favorite parts. I like that.
Yeah.
And they, you might not have seen this, Justin, yet, but they do switch that up every few weeks. They'll bring in somebody different.
I did. You know, I thought that. Like, I thought my eyes were playing tricks on me a couple of times. And I'm like, wait a minute. Was that the same band? And then I kind of realized that they were switching it up.
What do you think of the commentary so far, Justin? With Matt Stryker, who's another person that people love to hate. Mm-hmm. Vampiro got laughed at a lot in the first few weeks, I feel. What are your thoughts on that so far?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're fine. I don't think they take away from the show. There are times, and I think it's just the way the show's edited and the way it moves, and this reminded me a lot of, like, some of the early Impact stuff, and a little bit of, like, the old WCW Cindy shows, where they would kind of cut away quickly before I'm done kind of taking in what's happening, and the announcers start talking about something else. Like, this week, I guess we're okay to talk about, right? I mean, it's a week old. Last week, I should say, when they had the battle for the Gift of the Gods coin, and they had the six-man with Killshot and Marty the Moth. And at the end of the match, Marty takes back the dog tags, and they kind of show it. And I know, like, you know, we always complain about the hammer, getting the sledgehammer pluck, getting banged over our heads. But they didn't really comment on it, and they kind of, like, didn't sell it. Like, it was kind of a big deal, because they made a big thing of it pre-match, with Marty giving back the dog tags to earn Killshot's, loyalty in the match. And then he steals it back anyway after they win the coin, and Killshot chases him away. And they're kind of, like, talking about something else and just fade out quickly. So, like, that kind of stuff. And I don't think that's really on the commentary. It's more the presentation bugs me just tiny. Overall, though, I think they're fine. I mean, you know, Stryker still does his cringeworthy puns here and there. But I think he's much better here than he was in his final days with WWE. So they're fine. Are they my favorite commentary team? No, but I don't think they don't hurt the show, which is the big win these days.
And they'll bring Vampiro into the storyline as well, which is kind of neat to do. And speaking of the Gift of the Gods and Marty the Moth and Killshot.
I love Marty the Moth. His tights always make me laugh. They're so friggin' tight and, like, short, and I don't know.
and the two of them will be in it. And that's another thing about Lucha Underground is that they've taken advantage of some of WWE's dropouts, mm-hmm. People who got cut from Tough Enough and such, and, allowing them to make a name for themselves. And Marty the Moth, one of them, who will be in the Gift of the Gods match. Also, Sexy Star Jaga, who's fairly new to the Lucha Underground scene.
He's got that crazy lady after him.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Cobra Moon.
That's right.
Sinestro de la Muerte, who was with Katrina. Who else is that? Mariposa. Mm-hmm. And this dude who looks like the Black Panther, but he is not the Black Panther, because Marvel will sue the pants off of them.
Is he going to wrestle in that mask? It's very intense.
I sure hope so. And the ring's usually mic'd pretty good, so I hope he has that Black Scorpion voice
maybe
going
he'll be,
on.
Maybe he'll be an Anchorman thing. He'll be Sex Panther.
Voiced by Ole Anderson.
I liked that segment backstage with him and Cueto last week. Like, it was a lot of intensity about him. Cueto telling him to be, don't be arrogant, be confident. And I like that. I thought it put over him as a star, because they put him right in this match without a qualifier. So already, which is another plus, they do a nice job of making these guys seem important. So, like, already I feel like this guy, okay, he's from somewhere else. They brought him in. They're giving him a little bit of a backstory, and now we feel like he's important because he's meeting with the boss. The boss is honoring him by putting him in this big match. without qualifying. So already, you know, I feel like, okay, this is going to be a big deal when he wrestles.
Also, one of the things that Lucha Underground is really good at is mixing a lot of storylines into these multi-person matches. So you're going to have Daga and Cobra Moon. You're going to have Marty the Moth being the hugest creep on the planet.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Especially with Sexy Star there. You have Sexy Star and Mariposa back in the ring again. You know, you have Killshot and Marty the Moth together. You have Sinestro de la Muerte probably trying to steal more souls. You know, you have all these different people coming with all their individual storylines, and they're really good at mixing that together. So I'm really looking forward to that. And looking at the lineup, other than maybe the Black Panther, I don't.
Yeah, it's a great lineup. And
see an obvious person to take the Gift of the God.
Yeah, true. I mean, I don't. Yeah, no, it's definitely an interesting mix of talent, and I think as long as we get one Marty the Moth kind of butterfly wing thing that it does, I'll be happy. But anyway, go ahead, Steve.
And I'm thinking that there's a possibility of Sexy Star taking this because they started the season with her being kind of kidnapped by Marty the Moth and Mariposa. And I think maybe she gets her comeuppance here, and not her comeuppance, but gets her comeback here.
Yeah, and they were really, really pushing her hard on that last episode, talking about her backstory again, you know, the whole having been abused and, you know, everything to do with the gimmick. So it was almost like a refresher to get you ready for Ultima Lucha. So, I mean, looking at the roster in the match, you know, Jaga, I mean, they're kind of giving him a push the way they've been you know, talking about him, but on the flip side, you know, something with Cobra Moon will probably take him out of the match. So, yeah, I mean, Sexy Star is as good a chance as anyone.
And correct me if I'm wrong, but I don't remember Sexy Star getting her proper revenge on Marty the Moth before kind of transitioning over to Mariposa earlier in the season.
No, she had that great No Mas match with Mariposa, which is very brutal, but not really much of a revenge, Marty the Moth. They kind of brought in Willie Mack to get the revenge for her. And
right,
Lucha Underground does a pretty good job of allowing the females to be more on an equal ground as the men. And of course, yes, the Gift of the Gods match, you know, it allows you very much like the Money in the Bank contract to have a title shot. It's as Dario Cueto would say, an opportunity and another opportunity that he's giving. In fact, a unique opportunity is a four-way match that was set up this week between Tejano, Cage, Willie Mack, the aforementioned Willie Mack, and Son of Havoc, Ivelisse's former partner slash boyfriend. Glenn, we had talked earlier in the day, and I got to get your opinion because you have an amazing imagination. What do you think this unique opportunity might be? You know, again, we don't operate on spoilers here, so Glenn and I legitimately do not know what the unique opportunity is as we're taping.
Me neither.
Yeah, I was just a little bit deflated when they did that whole segment hyping up the match, and then he didn't say what the friggin' opportunity is.
It's unique.
It's unique, and there are four guys, and they're fighting for a unique opportunity. Ha ha, get it, get it? So I started thinking, what would be a unique opportunity in Lucha Underground? Is the winner of this match going to get the opportunity to be Dario's new secretary? Is the winner of this match going to get the opportunity to be the new subcontractor to repair Dario's office every time someone crashes through it? Because, you know, that's a badly needed job around the temple.
Does the winner get to spend the weekend in La Jolla, California with Marty the Moth Martinez?
Does the winner get to be managed by 423 Get Fame?
You know, Rita Sagrada.
You know, does the winner get to try to mentor Marty the Moth, model some good behavior for him, for God's sake? You know, could he be Pentagon Jr.'s new maestro?
Vampiro's personal psych nurse?
Matanza's friend slash maybe lunch? You know, absorb Sinestro de la Muerte's soul and become an even deadlier death. You know, it could be anything.
Katrina's second glowing rock.
Hey.
And speaking of Katrina, her Her Charge, Mil Muertes, his Back from the Dead. Here's some supernatural stuff for you. Coming back from death after losing the Graver Consequences match to Matanza, the champion. King Cuerno, his appointment, kind of basically took him as a prize, like a poacher. And Mil Muertes came back to life somehow. His eyes are now red to show you the fact that he is a member of the undead.
And angrier than ever.
He is angry. He's also he's got very fat, I got to be honest. And the two of them will be going up against each other in a death match. I don't really know if there's much more to be said than that.
Well, this is, for all the matches that have been put together just in the last few weeks, and this match was made official last week, this, like, tension between them has been going on all year. You know, it's the first episode of the season, Katrina was enlisting King Cuerno to kind of do Mil's dirty work for him a little bit. And so that's been going the whole season. I was a little surprised when they actually had their match a couple weeks before Ultima Lucha. Mm-hmm. But as, you know, a step to get to the death match, I get it. So I am looking forward to a good clubber in here. And I think I'm going to get it.
Yeah, definitely. Couple more matches. The Dream Match. And I have we'll have a question for both Justin and Glenn here about this. Prince Puma versus Rey Mysterio, who's made his debut this year. Last week, Puma faced Dragon Azteca. And if you like high-flying action, like 10 minutes of just flying all over the place, that was the match for you. Puma, Dragon Azteca, and Rey were a trios team. They won the title, and Puma's decided he wants to take a shot at Mysterio. And then my question for both you guys, Justin and Glenn, is this a dream match? Like Prince Puma / Ricochet against Rey Mysterio? Is Mysterio past his prime at this point for this to be considered a dream match?
I think it's a good, like, maybe passing of the torch match, or at least, you know, a prove it match for Rey. So, yeah, dream match on some level. I think it's one, maybe not a dream match on, obviously not on paper, but we'll see if it's a dream match when it's done. You know what I mean? Like, that's kind of what I want to say. Like, it's more to me like Ray's going to show that he can go out there one last time and deliver on a match like this. I mean, it certainly has big-time show-stealing possibilities.
I think it's definitely a Lucha Underground dream match. As far as Prince Puma has been pushed as the ace of Lucha Underground since pretty much its beginning. Mm-hmm. And so with someone who's been pushed that strong for 2 seasons now to go up against someone like Rey Mysterio in the environment that they've built in Lucha Underground, it is a dream match. Rey, I think, has been great in Lucha Underground, but with all of the other high flyers and like even the big guys are doing high flying stuff in this company. So everyone's doing the Lucha high flying athletic stuff. Rey has been doing great for himself, but he's been a little bit exposed. You know, he's great for Rey Mysterio, but he's moving a little slower than all these other guys, which of course he is. He's on his 6th set in these. But as far as this match goes, it definitely is something that they have done a good job building as a dream match.
And I think that's a good point. Rey Mysterio is a little bit behind the rest of the guys in terms of, you know, the high flying ability at this point. But this, you know, Rey is the legend here, and he is treated as a legend by the announcers, the fans, and the wrestlers on screen. So I don't know long term. And again, with no spoilers, I don't know what's happening next season. I don't know if he's still going to be around for next season. He's kind of been the elder statesman, you know, like Conan was in season one. So it will be intriguing to see what happens next, as there's not many more storylines I feel like they can do with him around besides the passing the torch. I don't have any clever torch segues for the last two matches. The trios match, which we talked about earlier on, the masked faces that are remaining, Drago, Phoenix, Aerostar, teaming up against the trios title holders, PJ Plack, Johnny Mundo, and Jack Evans, known as the Worldwide Underground. And this is another match which had its beginnings in the first couple episodes of the season, where you saw Jack Evans come in, defeat Drago, proclaim that he was the Dragon Killer. Eventually, he was backed up by Drago, backed up by Aerostar, Evans backed up by PJ Black after a three-way with Drago, and they had some great nunchuck, a great nunchuck match, which was incredibly stiff. Phoenix was placed in a trios team with Black and Evans for the trios tournament. Eventually, Johnny Mundo, I destroyed Phoenix backstage, took his spot in the tournament, and they won the title. Glenn, you know, who are you thinking is coming out of it? Like, I think this is one that's pretty obvious, but, you know, I've been wrong in these things before.
I actually think it could go either way. Mm-hmm. Mostly, I'm just happy they found a place to put John Morrison where I actually kind of like him, because I have been down on him for the longest time, basically since he went singles. And for the amount that I saw season one, I was not into his feud with Alberto Del Rio, because I don't really like either of them. Mm-hmm. So I was pleasantly surprised when he joined this trios team and kind of blossomed a little. I think these three have pretty good chemistry as trios. I'm always glad to see Drago. I feel a little bad for Phoenix. He got kind of lost in the shuffle. You know, after all his stuff with the Gift of the Gods and the title at the beginning of the season, ever since then, he's been kind of lost, and he just kind of floated into this spot here. So that seemed a little strange.
Yeah, and at one point I want to make about this match is with Jack Evans, who was a guy who was a lot of people's least favorite person in Ring of Honor for the years that he was there, from like kind of 04-ish to 06, somewhere around there. It's neat to see him come back a few years later. You know, he spent a lot of time in Mexico. He's bulked up a little bit, but he's taken kind of that annoyingness and just ramped it up quite a bit. He talks in the ring constantly, just instantly one of the biggest heels on the roster, where it was a guy who people wanted more to go away when he was younger. You know, he was like super skinny, just did a bunch of breakdancing, some silly moves, and now he's picked up some, you know, more of kicks and stuff like that. It's nice to see him evolve over the last few years. And one more match to talk about, the main event, Pentagon Jr., a guy who really hasn't been on that much this season, was written off for a while. About, I'd say about halfway through the season, when he was destroyed by Dario Cueto's brother, Montanza. And they will have their match finally in the main event for the title. Glenn, Justin, Glenn, you first. Who do you got? Who do you think's going to win this?
Ooh. I don't know, because the way the storyline's been built, you got to think that it would be Pentagon. Because he's, of all people, Pentagon Jr., after everything he did last season, is now the returning, revenging babyface. It's kind of amazing.
Yeah, seeing how mega evil he was in season one.
Yeah, and he's been kind of like that tweener figure who didn't change the way he acts. He just does it to heels now.
And Prince Puma, you know, kind of been the ace, but Pentagon is really the star, you know, the star of the show in a way that he's the one who's become one of the faces of the company who you haven't heard of. You know, most people had heard of Ricochet when they started, but Pentagon is all of a sudden, he's in a way, he reminds me of Steen a little bit, kind of a tweener who can be cheered by everyone, the loved heel.
And Pentagon has really benefited from the audience having that sort of cult feel to the extent that they do, right, because they really got behind him and would not stop.
Now, Justin, have you seen the match from Ultima Lucha when Pentagon went up against Vampiro?
I have not.
Yeah, that would definitely be one to look up. It is very gory, so if you're not a big hardcore match fan, I would not watch it. Yeah, it's pretty bad.
Yeah, that match kind of went round the bend for me. I kind of thought it was trash, but that's me. I know a lot of people love it.
It was. I think in terms of the storyline, it really, that's what made it for me, is the fact that how it connected to the storyline and then how it transitioned to season two. And that's why I feel like Pentagon's going to win because of that, but I have no idea for this one. Again, it could go either way. Justin, from your few weeks of watching, do you have any thoughts about that main event?
No, I agree. It could go either way. I don't know. I guess it depends how much they're going to carry over into season three. Like, do they keep telling the story? Who's going to win the Gift of the Gods? I mean, that could play a role in this, too. I mean, I'll say Pentagon just to end the season on an up note. I just don't know if that's the style that they're going for. So,
all right. And if you haven't watched this, if you're listening, you haven't watched any of Lucha Underground, this is the time to check it out. We're taping on the first night of Ultima Lucha. It will be going on the next couple weeks on Wednesday. And they replay them after each episode, so you're not going to miss anything if you haven't seen it.
If you dump cable and have Sling, they're on demand the last five episodes.
There you go.
Yeah, if you're not familiar with the show, basically any episode you watch will have something to dazzle you.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I will be watching. I might even watch it as soon as we're done here. I'm kind of excited about it. I've been getting texts about it and trying to ignore them. So we will take a quick break. We are going to say goodbye, good night to Glenn. And, boy, I've been waiting for this all day. This next segment that we're going to be talking about will bring a
Steve Willie, you have been deleted.
Oh, God, it's going to be so beautiful. Nate's been stretching. He's taken some water. He is ready to go. We will talk to another special
guest. No disrespect to Brother Glenn, but, you know, I had to get my muscles ready because I'm in my dilapidated boat of my mind, ready for final deletion.
What's that I hear? It's an extraordinary xylophone.
Senor Benjamin, oh, send us a break.
Oh boy.
Prepare the battlefield. We will shall be back with our new special guest.
This is Parv, and I'm here to tell you to listen and subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only Place to Be Nation podcast network. That's the PWO PTBN podcast network, where you'll find a ton of in-depth shows done by hardcore fans. We've got Chris Zellner's 1-2 Punch of Exile on Bad Street, and with David Bickenspan, a smash hit Between the Sheets. We've got Wrestling Culture with Dylan Hales and Dave Musgrave, Goodwill Wrestling and the Reaction Shows with Good Old Will from Texas. We got This Week in Wrestling with my man Pete and Johnny Sorrow, Stephen Graham and Tim Livingston's Pro Wrestling Super Show, Tag Teams Back Again with Kelly and Marty Sleaze, and a ton of other great shows too. And of course, there's Titans of Wrestling and Where the Big Boys Play with yours truly and some dude from down south called Chad. PWO, PTBN, Podcast Network.
Matt, this has been the best party ever.
Can't believe
excellent.
You're
1 year old. You're one. What?
It is so exciting.
I have a present for Maxo.
Hola, Snippet.
Gracias.
The garden looks magnificent.
Thank you, sir.
Marta enfermo.
No está enfermo, ¿ok? Él tiene un gran motivo, pero no está enfermo. Y lo demás, este día es para Maxwell. No de Matt, no de Jeff, nadie más que Maxwell.
Ok.
Pero gracias, thank you. That was so nice.
Delightful. It's an extraordinary xylophone.
Gracias. I remember when I lost my mind. There was something so pleasant about that place. Even your emotions have an echo. And so much space.
We are back on Clotheslines and Headlines. JT, Steve, the Godfather, Cast of Thousands. And we are here to talk about an event that set the wrestling world on fire, an event that set social media on fire, an event that damn near set Jeff Hardy on fire. Of course, we're dipping back into the waters of TNA Impact Wrestling, and we're going to talk about Final Deletion, the best / worst 18 minutes of your life. And to help us with this conversation, we're bringing back, I guess we can call him our TNA correspondent now.
Yeah. I think so. Sadly, for better or for worse.
For better or for worse. Aaron George in the building. A-Aaron, I ask you again. How are you feeling this week, my brother?
Brother Nero! I'm so excited.
Oh, this is like Christmas. Like, I don't know. This is something that, you know, last time you were on when we talked, it was right after the contract signing video.
Yes.
The great contract signing, you know, back to where it all began. And from there, things just got crazier and crazier. And it all culminated this week with Final Deletion on Impact Wrestling.
I need to ask one thing here. Because I feel like this is like a JFK, man on the moon. Like, where were you, right? So where were you when you watched Final Deletion for the first time? Like, when did you watch it? Like, give me the setting, Aaron. We'll start with you. I'm going to go right around the horn quickly here, and then we'll get into this thing. Because I need to picture where we all were.
I had to drop my family off somewhere, and I was sitting in my car, parked, watching it on my phone, with the windows open, roaring laughter.
And that was this morning?
Yes, and I had it loud, so like people probably heard like the speakers, whatever it was. And let me tell you, the bass on the music is so heavy.
Oh, yeah.
That's where I was.
Steve?
I had to watch the end of Lucha Underground this morning, and I have the whole family's been home since Saturday, and I just needed some space. So I went down, did a little treadmill action, watched Lucha Underground, and like I got to find a place to watch this. And so despite the fact that my kids were about to kill each other, I went and locked myself in my bedroom with my phone, found it on YouTube. No wrestling in our house for the kids, so I locked the door and just died. I was trying to take notes, and I just stopped.
How about you, Brother Natro?
Oh, I had to watch it live. I watched it as it happened, and you know, like I said, one of the big parts of the night for me was the social media component. You know, not just talking to friends or listeners to the various podcasts, but you know, getting input from people like Mick Foley or Chris Jericho or Lance Storm. Like it was this big communal event on social media that we very rarely get nowadays in pro wrestling.
I arrived at work early this morning just so I could watch it quickly on YouTube before everyone else came in. So I was sitting at my desk. Just
you dying, changed your schedule.
Dying watching. Yeah. Well, usually Wednesdays I get my allergy shot the way in. I left early from my house this morning so I could get my shot and still get in early enough to like have quiet to watch this thing. So that's where I was, and just huddled over my desk computer watching this thing. So, all right, Nate, take us through this story of Final Deletion.
All right. So Final Deletion, you know, we're not going to go beat by beat because we would be here all night long, but we're going to hit the big moments. And we got a big moment right off the bat because a gentleman that I think is the unsung hero of this entire production is one Senior Benjamin. Senior Benjamin is the first thing you see when Impact Wrestling comes on, and he gives us the do not try this at home, kids, warning that we've seen millions of times in pro wrestling. The only difference is he's speaking to us in Espanol.
Spanish.
By the way, I read today that is Rebby Sky's father.
Yes, that's okay. I see that as well. Okay. Yes. Oh, so Senior Benjamin lets us know right off the bat, this is going to be a different kind of a show. And so then the next scene we get, we are at the birthday party for one Maxwell Hardy.
Who looks exactly like Matt Hardy. He has the same hair as Matt Hardy.
Same head, the same hair.
He's the heir to the Hardy throne, the heir to the Hardy brand.
It's going to be a punny night. I love
it. And we already made mention of it. Maxwell's gift from Senior Benjamin is an exquisite xylophone.
Extraordinary xylophone.
Extraordinary.
It was exquisite too.
I love that Benjamin is a gardener and a henchman. Oh my God.
Yes, he was a gardener / minion.
Because we didn't get it really revealed in the contract signing. He just was like the gardener. We talked about it, remember? And like now he's like revealed as like his top henchman.
Yeah, yes, they barely referenced him. Like he asked if he was okay.
He's essentially like Mexican Alfred.
Oh, so good.
To Matt Hardy's Batman. So, so from there, we get Matt Hardy doing as Matt Hardy is wont to do, breaking the fourth wall.
Oh, yeah.
And he looks directly at us, the viewers, and says, I'm glad you are here to see that my plans come to fruition or something like that. I can't give to it justice. But Matt Hardy lets us know that we are all going to go on this journey together.
And then there's the weird soliloquy with the candle.
Yes.
Yes. This candle. This is a Chekhov's candle because it does come into play later.
It does.
Oh, man. So we go with Matt basically setting things up, saying that, you know, this is going to be the deletion of Brother Nero because only the Matt Hardy line can exist and continue on with the Hardy name. So that was kind of the end of Act 1 of this brilliant drama.
And they're going to fight at sunset.
Yes, at sunset. But now comes my favorite. This gets crazier and crazier and escalates quickly. But I think the second act might have been my favorite part of the final deletion. Because we go from the craziness of Matt Hardy to all of a sudden, and mind you, Matt Hardy and Jeff Hardy are neighbors in this whole thing. And we go from Matt's crazy compound to Jeff's front lawn. And Jeff is just walking around. You know, he's on the riding mower, cutting the grass in the designs of his face paint.
Which is brilliant, by the way. I mean, that's impressive.
He's very Hardy-esque. He spent some time in the imagination.
And I feel, too, like with the music they're playing, they're really trying to, like, make Jeff Hardy to be this simple man of the earth.
Yes, just a normal dude.
He works his garden.
Oh, so then Jeff...
He is not a drug-addled meth head.
No, not at all.
So just normal people spend hours making their lawns look like that.
But to make him even more relatable, Jeff goes inside, and the first thing he does is sits on the couch and starts strumming his guitar.
Why is his couch?
You can't hear the guitar though that he's playing, but there is guitar music in the background.
Yes, there's guitar music playing on the soundtrack, and he's just kind of, I guess, Milli Vanilli-ing it.
His house is so blue. It's pure blue, his whole house.
He's got a nice house. I will say that for both Hardys. Nice digs. But Jeff spots out of his peripheral vision a drone approaching.
Not just any drone. It's Vanguard 1 is the name.
Vanguard 1. V1, the drone. And the doorbell rings. I guess the drone pressed the doorknob.
Before we get there, did you guys pause it to read what the drone said?
Yes.
Yes.
The phony twist of fate.
Yeah. Known aliases: Charismatic Enigma, Willow, Jimmy Jack Tompkins, and Masked Mountain.
Yes.
Was it fake twist of fate or so?
Phony.
Yeah, phony twist of fate was his finishing move. Oh,
okay. His other attributes are selfish traitor, miscreant, likes to play guitar and paint, likes motorcycles.
So Jeff opens the door, and not only do we have the Vanguard 1 drone, but we've now got a swarm of Matt Hardy drones attacking Jeff Hardy's compound. So Jeff does what anybody would do in that situation. He grabs his guitar, and a la El Kabong or Jeff Jarrett, begins to swat drones out of the air. And now we get to the point. I think this is the moment, guys. This is kind of our Mason-Dixon line, kind of the line of demarcation. Like, if you are cool with what happens next, you enjoy the ride. But if you hated what happened next, then you probably hated the rest of Final Deletion. Because V1, the drone, turns around, and out of this drone, we get a Matt Hardy hologram inviting Brother Nero to join me at the property line for Final Deletion.
I see you've seen my fleet of aerial assault robots.
Jeff chasing the fucking drone on the bike, too, just grabs it all.
Yes, because Jeff has this moment where he's kind of like, I think he speaks as a conduit for the viewers right after the hologram, because Jeff just kind of takes his break and goes, oh, hell no. Then hops on his dirt bike. I assume it's the same dirt bike that he broke his leg on early this year, and he tries to chase down this drone, but he can't catch it because the drone flies over water. So while all that's going on in the backyard, Matt Hardy is on the front lawn, oh, where we've established Jeff Hardy takes pride in his lawn, and Matt Hardy starts laughing maniacally and driving over Jeff Hardy's hard work with his own lawnmower.
You are not the only landscaper in the family.
I just wrote on my notes, because I was taking, like, I was trying to take notes so I could remember this, and I just wrote in giant capital letters, he broke his crop circles. That's like the worst heel thing to do ever. Can you imagine how many hours it took to do those?
Oh. And it looked like he did it by hand. Like that shot of Jeff Hardy, he's got a plow. It's not a lawnmower, it's a plow.
Yeah, he had the little like weed whacker that was trimming the edges.
Mm-hmm. This is absurd, as sickly absurd. Just the face that Hardy Matt's making on the tractor.
Yes, he's like a semi-orgasmic face as he trashes his brother's hard work.
But he keeps having to put his hands on the wheel to keep it straight.
And then, of course, he gives the gasoline from my escapade. Spread it on the battle zone.
This is the remaining gasoline from my earlier landscaping escapade.
And the greatest part of this particular scene is the quick transition that Ribby Sky does. And she walks up to Senor Benjamin and addresses him in Espanol, because we've established that her and Senor Benjamin will speak in Spanish to one another. She's like, Senor Benjamin, what the hell are you doing? Like, I'm doing this for Senor Hardy. And then she's angry at him, but then Matt comes up with the can of gasoline. Like, this is perfect for deleting. Prepare the battlefield for massacre. And she's cool with it, I guess.
It takes a lot of fuel to delete a brother Nero. I love, too, how, like, straight-faced when she asks him, like, when she asks Senor Benjamin what he's doing, straight-faced, he's like, I'm preparing the battlefield for massacre.
Yes. Oh, but we aren't done with Senor Benjamin, because up next we get maybe the most offensive / delightful scene in this particular melodrama. We get Senor Benjamin preparing the field for battle, loading up all these weapons, digging ditches, set to the tune of some Pitbull Ricky Martin knockoff. Yeah. It's like, I don't know who they got to play this, this particular music, because it sure wasn't Billy Corgan, but you got the henchman / gardener, Senor Benjamin, hooking things up for final deletion.
I enjoyed putting multiple kendo sticks under the ring.
Multiple kendo sticks.
You only got two guys.
Oh. And now, here's where things go even crazier, because we get some unknown referee, because correct me if I'm wrong, this wasn't a TNA official.
No, he's the man from the premonition.
Yes, he's the man from the premonition who Matt asked, are you a licensed official?
I saw you in my premonition.
And this was the guy, like, backstory here, the guy who recently, I believe, got fired from Ring of Honor for being a little too touchy-feely with Delirious's girlfriend. Oh. I think this is the same guy.
That was the premonition Matt saw.
I needed a hands-on official for this match.
He's so confused as he's pulling up to get his car.
I saw a great tweet that said the most dangerous thing of the night was that the referee didn't have a seatbelt on driving around.
And he showed up with his gear on, though. So he's
ready to go. He's like Field of Dreams. He just knew he had to be there and didn't know why.
So now we're in the ring. Well, first of all, before Brother Nero even shows up, Matt knows there's only one way to summon a Hardy. And that is with violin music.
I love that Jeff even shows up for this. Why even come? Like, you know, like, this is absurd. Like, would you go?
I mean, Matt put in a lot of hard work for this, though.
If your brother's being insane and, like, saying he's going to kill you, like, delete you from Earth, and he set up a death trap, like, friggin' saw in his backyard, and he's got a maniacal gardener, and like, there's really nothing on the line. Jeff isn't contractually obligated for this. Like,
he's got an army of drones.
Like, why are you even going, you know? Like, I would just went headed over to, like, Fridays and had a burger while Matt was standing there playing the violin in his fucking ring.
No, Senor Benjamin, really maniacal, or is he just is he really, you know, good independent contractor?
I guess so. Earning that money.
He does have a sweet shirt that you can buy now at ProWrestlingTees.com.
Oh, that was so good. If anyone listening wants to, you know how the, like, the divas, you know, independent girls will have, like, Amazon wish lists? I think I need to make an Amazon wish list, and if any viewers want to get me a Senor Benjamin,
I know at least one that'll buy you something, Steve.
All right, excellent.
So we get to the match, you know, after Jeff Hardy is summoned by the Stradivarius violin music, and Final Deletion begins.
With Matt, a lockup.
Matt going in slow motion while trying his usual moves in this whole setting, and then screaming, delete, you know, while he's using the weapons. It was, the whole thing is like,
he tries to choke Jeff out with a ladder. I think they bring a lattice out from underneath the ring. And go through the lattice.
Watching him though, like in the beginning moments, like going through his offense, like hobbling in slow motion, was just it just made it. And then the music and the filming.
Oh,
like,
the music.
I don't know if any of you guys ever watched like The Biggest Loser. Like, it reminded me of a competition scene for The Biggest Loser. Like, watching these guys hobble around, the way the thing was filmed with this dramatic music playing. I was waiting for like Jillian to come out and yell at them for using the ladder the wrong way.
The music really set the tone, because it was something that I thought going into this it would take me out of it, but it certainly got you invested, especially when we get to the spot where Jeff sets up a ladder straddling the ropes, places his brother on said ladder, then climbs another ladder up to the tippy top of a tree.
And who put that there?
Right, probably Senior Benjamin. And Jeff hits a swanton bomb out of a tree, and it's not the finish.
Because he misses. He hits just the ladder, and then he still tries to pin him.
Yeah, still tries to pin him.
I didn't understand that either.
The fact that Jeff Hardy is taking that bump in this match alone, just you have to question everything about it. I mean,
Seriously. Jeff was taking everything so seriously, like the last bump that he takes, the bump off of the ladder. Like, Jeff, come on, man. You know, like, if I'm Matt, I'm like, I'm supposed to be the crazy one, Jeff. After Jeff's failed attempt at a swanton, Matt decides to bring in some fireworks and
gets crazier.
What's wrong with you?
That's the best. That the stream, there's just fire all over the screen.
Yes, this is the first time all year that Roman has been over with wrestling.
Oh, you've been hanging up to that one since last
time. I've had that in my back pocket, and it probably won't be the last time you hear this. If you hear some of the other thoughts that I give on some other shows, but Roman candles, a stream of Roman candles is shot out. Jeff Hardy, brain surgeon that he is, does not try to hide under the ring, does not try to run. He holds up a trash can lid and chastises his brother. You're crazy. What are you doing?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
What's wrong with you?
But he's the only one saying that.
Right. He's Jeff Hardy's the normal one in this band of morons.
I mean, nobody, company. Not the ref, not Rebby, not Senior Benjamin. No one has tried to get
he's
mad.
In this dream he can't escape from. He's, why is everyone this nuts except for me?
So after Matt fires all of his Roman candles, he assumes Brother Nero has been deleted, and he grabs a rake, I guess, to finish the job. And as he walks around the ring, he's like, Brother Nero. And then we get a close-up on Matt Hardy, and he loses all of his accent, and he's like, oh shit.
Oh, that's so good.
And then we cut to the other angle, and Jeff Hardy's laying on the ground with his own fireworks, and he's like, you're damn right, oh shit. Which begins a chase scene, which leads to my favorite line of this whole thing, because as Jeff is shooting Roman candle fireworks.
Hang on, before you get to it, Nate, we just have to call out Matt's awful running as he's dodging the fire. I mean, he's like limping his way through the yard and somehow avoiding these fireworks.
Very Fred Sanford-esque. He's got the slow bob going, and he's running, and he comes across a dilapidated boat.
Oh, it's a dilapidated boat.
Oh man, so Matt hides underneath the dilapidated boat while Brother Nero continues to fire Roman candles at his brothers. We're not even at the finish yet, folks.
No,
because now we're at the edge of the lake, I guess, somewhere in Cameron. And the Hardys fall into the water because, first Matt applied a sleeper hold. I don't know. I don't know why we're going to you know, Greco-Roman moves now.
After fireworks.
After fireworks. So they're in the water. Matt tries to drown his brother on national TV in front of a referee and everything.
Well, he warned him. He was going to delete him.
Yeah. And then Matt comes out of the water, but there's no Jeff. And Matt looks at the camera.
That close-up is amazing.
I guess Brother Nero has been flushed. But no, Brother Nero hasn't been flushed because we get the reappearance of Willow. Yes, Willow made an appearance. And I got to say, guys, this might have been the only time I've ever been happy to see Willow show up on my TV screen.
Oh, God. Imagine being under the water with that costume on and having to emerge. Like, how does he even get under the water with that thing on?
What was he using to choke him? Was it a broken umbrella?
Yes, it was his umbrella. It's like the Willow umbrella. He used to choke Matt. And we think this is going to be the end for broken Matt Hardy. He's going to get choked out and Willow screaming, "You tried to drown your brother." But who comes to save the day in a spot that would make Scott Hall proud? We get Senior Benjamin with the taser.
Out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere.
Moving very slowly.
Yes. Slower than Matt Hardy somehow.
Tases Willow. Willow screams in Willow voice, which I thought I just found that unintentionally hilarious. Because he was laughing regularly and then he got shocked. He's like, "This is ridiculous, Jeff Hardy. You're a crazy man." So we get Jeff Hardy and Senior Benjamin. They go off screen. Matt comes back around and finds Willow laying on the ground. Now get ready. In a twist that would make M. Night Shyamalan, Vince Russo, and Chubby Checker proud. Matt Hardy pins Senior... I almost spoiled it. Matt Hardy pins Willow for what he thinks is the victorious pinfall. But then he reaches down, pulls off the Willow mask to confirm that he's beaten his brother. And lo and behold, it's Senior Benjamin. And we get the great line... Senior Benjamin, no.
And I love how the ref clings to the rules in this moment. Yeah. It's not an official pin.
Yes, he is like really over the top. And
he's an official referee. He's doing his job.
He is officially licensed. Yes, we confirmed.
So upon realizing his failure, Matt's looking for Jeff, and out of nowhere, here comes the real Jeff Hardy, and they battle over to the pit that. Senior Benjamin dug earlier. Oh, by the way, here's an Easter egg that I was not aware of, but Brian Mann clued me in on. If you watch it back on your DVR, go to the moment where Matt's like screaming, "Senior Benjamin, no!" If you click the frame by frame, you'll see Senior Benjamin just barely holding back laughter. But he's supposed to be unconscious.
And it's his like, son-in-law, for Christ's sake.
That's what I was thinking this afternoon as it was playing back in my head over and over again. How could they not just be cracking up after every time they pause the camera? Just dying. They had been having the time of their lives.
Now, here we go, folks. We're on the home stretch now. We've made our way to the pit, the pit that has been prepared for massacre. All of this happened on a real program, folks. A wrestling show, yes. Like you thought Lucha Underground was crazy. And they're fighting in this pit. And Jeff gets Matt down, and instead of going for the pin or the submission, he decides to climb up on this Hardy symbol that has just been put here. Like, I can't imagine.
It's like a tombstone, basically.
Yeah, I can't imagine Senior Benjamin did this by himself, because it was like, had to be like 15, 20 feet in the air. So Jeff climbs this thing, and we think this is it. We think that this is going to be the end for Matt Hardy, but here comes Rebby Sky, and she's holding a candle.
What? What's the candle going to do?
She passes the candle, and this is some real deep symmetry and metaphor work by the Hardys, because he takes the birthday candle from his son, his blood, to take out his own blood, Jeff Hardy. And before Matt lights the symbol, we get a flashback of
the quick cuts.
All of the events. Yes, the prime cuts of this feud. We get the contract signing. We get Brother Nero, I've been expecting you. I knew you would come. We get Jeff Hardy saying they're crazy. And then Matt reaches up, lights this symbol on fire, barely has enough time to move
himself. Lights it on fire with a birthday candle. Go ahead.
A birthday candle.
Almost referee, burns himself.
Yes, almost burns himself. The referee runs out of the way because he's like, I'm not getting paid enough for this. This is TNA. I don't even know if the check's cleared. And Jeff Hardy takes a bump from the top of this flaming symbol onto a pile of dirt.
They needed to, like, quote Meet the Parents. How much lacquer is on this fucking thing? Because that thing went up from this birthday. I just went up in flames. Like,
So Matt Hardy defeats his brother, gets a official pin count that is officially recognized by this referee, and then just stands over his deleted brother with the Hardy symbol burning behind him, and we fade to black, thus ending final deletion. I guess you could say it is over.
All right, so obviously the greatest backyard match of all time.
Yes.
Like,
it's better than Dude Love sodomizing that guy.
So if you're, I mean, if you're a TNA, right? Like, how do you handle this? Do you continue to let these guys live in this fantasy world and not even bother trying to integrate them into the rest of the show? Because that's where I'm at. Like, how do you just have Matt Hardy go wrestle in the Impact Zone, like, next week? You know what I mean? Like they have to keep doing this, right? Can you bring other wrestlers into this story, into this world, and just make it, like, a different, like, Mario Brothers when they used to have the Zelda world on Friday? Like, can this just be, like, the last 20 minutes of every show is in the other world? I mean, I saw someone say, like, they should make Matt Hardy the champion. Like, no! He shouldn't even be in that realm. Like, he is just in this other world, like, in his property. And, like, he just does things from there. Like, he should
There should
not
be portals that pull the other guys into it.
Yes, or just referees driving them there. Whatever it is. They should never be, like, in the Impact Zone again. Like, they just need to exist in this own world. Because
that should
just
be the Impact Zone.
Yeah, or do that. Just eliminate everything else and just have everything here. I mean, they found a way around, right? I don't know if we were saying this earlier, but around, like, their shitty fans. You know, like, whatever. Like, not having to play in front of stupid fans. They're just doing this in front of nobody. It's unique. I mean, God bless him. It's unique.
My one worry is, what does this mean for Bob Ryder? Because clearly he's going to have typed up a missive by now because Jeff Hardy jumped off a flaming symbol.
That's right.
And that's what he did back in the day. I mean, he's got to, being a part of big TNA, he can't be a hypocrite about it. It was a flaming symbol. He's always the Undertaker's wasn't even flaming.
Oh, God.
No, you're right. They have to keep it going. If it just goes back to normal, like, how do you possibly explain
it's
that?
It's such a letdown. I mean, You can't. They haven't had this much hype in years. I mean, this is what they should be doing, all right? I mean, they've tried everything else.
Yep.
This is, you know, look at – I don't know what it's done for the ratings, but I mean, if you look at the general interest, like, when the hell's the last time – was it, like, the 2010, the move to Monday Night? Like, is that the last time TNA's had this much hype? Even when, like, they had Hogan Flair and shit like that, like, no one really cared. I mean, I would say since Hogan debuted, they haven't had this much interest in coverage.
Yeah, that initial Monday Night matchup, that was the last time that you saw this much attention and interest, quite frankly. And I think TNA did a shrewd move by sending this out to various websites and various critics and blogs and other people in the industry ahead of time to get kind of the word of mouth spreading, and it worked. You know, I'm not sure what the ratings are because it's a holiday week, so the ratings are going to be a little bit later. But I think even if they didn't see this huge, massive bump in ratings for this episode, I think that just the fact that people were talking about TNA for a mostly positive thing, you know, which is a rarity these days, was a good thing. And the question then becomes, like you were saying, how do they spin this out and get people to come back next week for this title match with Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards, which should be a really, really strong match? How do they get people to come back to take a look at the X division or the tag division? How do they get people to come back to look at the knockouts? That's going to be the challenge because they had a great hook, but how do you follow it up?
And it just goes to show like how much sometimes just taking a risk can help. Like, I mean, Raw and SmackDown, there's no risk ever. You get the same thing week in, week out, right? And they took this risk. It could have fallen flat on their faces. But for me, like, almost everything I've read has been positive for it. Like, it's presented as the worst, best thing ever. Mm-hmm. But it's presented as something you need to see. And it is something you need to see. It's the
different.
Stupidest.
It's different.
It's so different. Like, I mean, it's the stupidest thing I've ever seen, but that's great. That's a good thing. Like, I watched it 3 times today. Like, I shouldn't have devoted this much time to this segment.
And they needed it. You can't keep just doing – trying to do what WWE does. This is what you needed to get people talking.
Yeah, and why not? I mean, like, the format kind of works with Lucha. I think it absolutely works with Lucha Underground. Mm-hmm. This is even crazier. Right. Like, even though Lucha Underground has undead people, like, this is crazier.
It's – yeah. I mean, it's – I can't think of much like it that I've seen in, as a wrestling fan. I mean, or in many other forms of media. I mean, it's so perfect for this era. You know, so many times in wrestling, you're like, oh, you know, this is 10 years too late, or this was 10 years too early. Like, this video is like 2016. You know what I mean? Just like two guys with a friggin' video camera in their backyard filming this movie that they've dreamed of doing and just putting it out there. Somehow convincing a multi-million-dollar TV company, wrestling company, to put it on their airwaves.
Base their promotion around it.
Yeah. Right. And you know, whatever. Like we said it last episode. If this is going to be their vanity promotion, go for it.
Fine.
And I mean, you got to give them credit because they, you know, it's kind of funny to look back with hindsight now, but a lot of people, I'd say most people, laughed at the contract signing video and not in the way they laughed. Like, I think the general reaction to Final Deletion was people were laughing for the first 5 minutes or so. And then it just sucked you in and you just had fun with it. But if they had gotten sensitive or gotten their back up about the negative response to the contract signing, we might not have gotten this. So, you know, hats off to Matt and Jeff and everybody else that put this together because – was it a great 5-star classic? No.
Yes.
But
yes. Yeah, absolutely it was.
It was 7 stars.
Yeah. I can't think of a better way they could have done it. I mean, it's Aaron's Hogan Andre debate, right? I mean, they did exactly what they needed to do, and it worked 100%. I mean,
I can remember the last time I had this much fun, and I was talking to some folks online about this today. It's like, just this year, the only thing I would even compare with this in terms of being a moment where I'm just like, oh, this is really cool on my TV screen is the moment where AJ had the stare down with Cena. But even that wasn't this. Like, this is...
I think AJ's debut maybe was like one because that was so surreal. And even Nakamura. Like those are kind of on the level of this, but...
But they didn't have Senior Bishop.
No. They didn't have deletions.
And as early as January or as late, I don't know what they're saying, whatever. But in January, I remember being sick of Matt and Jeff Hardy.
Oh yeah.
Like, I'd watch TNA, and every time Matt would come on, I'd be like, Jesus Christ, retire! Like, you can't do anything anymore.
And now that's why he's doing this.
Yeah, but he's must watch now.
Right. Like, now he's reinvented himself.
Yeah, I mean, the time I was waiting to come on tonight, I was just watching broken Matt Hardy interviews. Like, and they're all amazing.
And by the way,
he's great. He gets it. Like, he gets his character on social media. He's very
– He took over Jeff's account.
Yeah, it's very much like Bully Ray. Like, the way Bully Ray was able to kind of reinvent himself in TNA, Matt's done the same thing. And he is just, like, the most interesting character to me in pro wrestling right now.
Have you guys looked at Jeff Hardy's Twitter account?
No, it's him on it.
He's running it, and he renamed it hashtag Brother Nero deleted. And the pinned video is just a video of Matt laughing. You're gonna go to the Twitter page. It's just him laughing, and it's just subtitled delete, 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 with like this angry music playing underneath it.
And he's got a Twitter account for his son too. Like, he's just the best.
It's amazing that they're taking risks at this stage of their career too. Like, they're veterans, right? It's not like it's new guys trying to get attention. It's guys that have a move set, have things that work, have spots that work, and are going in another direction, if for no other reason to be creative. And I think that's awesome. More veterans should do this, but more veterans should take that lead and take more risks. Like,
they can easily phone it in. Like, we've seen ex-WWE guys come to TNA and just kind of rely on their high spots or rely on their signature moves. But, you know, Matt Hardy, a guy that, like you said, I wasn't that invested in at the end of last year, beginning of this year. But to his credit, man, he's worked his hind parts off with this whole thing, and it works. So, yeah, good job, Broken Matt Hardy.
Yeah.
Got Aaron.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's like a better version of King Booker.
Yes.
Like, King Booker was, like, vain and went insane as a king. This guy just went insane. Like, he went literally insane, built a fortress, designed drones. Like, he's become a supervillain.
And unfortunately, I think we might get a copycat of this coming up down the pike pretty soon in the WWE, which is not going to be nearly as good.
And they're, I mean, these guys are multimillionaires, have done everything they need to do, and they're putting that money back into the product. So God bless them. Yeah. God bless them. They're using their millions to do this nonsense. I mean, it's probably what they've wanted to do since they had their backyard promotion. It's God. Sorry. Any final comments anyone wants to get in on this thing before we wrap up?
It was amazing.
It was amazing.
It was amazing. And like, I don't know, like, if you don't like it, I don't know what you're looking for.
Yeah.
Like, it's clearly meant to be absurd. If you don't like it, you better never have liked King Booker. You better never like when they do food fights in WWE. You better never like any absurd characters they have, because this is just the height of absurdity, and it works on every level for me.
I mean, like we're saying off air, the fact that they play it as absurd is what makes it work. Like, they're not taking it seriously in any way.
No, he used a violin to summon his brother, and it worked.
To me, the best kind of description,
dated boat.
The best description I've heard of this was from Andrew Goldstein, and I had to retweet this because I was like, damn, I wish I had thought of that first. But he was like, you know, Final Deletion is pro wrestling's Trapped in the Closet. It's something that is ridiculous. It's something that is insane. It's something that's over the top. But at the same time, the people that created it are so committed to it and work out the details, and you can tell they're not phoning it in. And so you got something that is ridiculous, but because they believe it, because Broken Matt Hardy believes this so much, you end up getting sucked into it. So yeah, it was a great job by Matt and Jeff and everybody involved. And hopefully it brings more eyes to TNA, because they've actually been pretty good since moving to Pop TV, but we'll see. If nothing else, at least we'll always have Final Deletion.
I hope they put out a DVD. They have to put out a DVD.
And it's too bad that WWE is like doing the creative teams that they have now, because if they had an old school, like 1997-ish style booking committee sitting around Vince's pool, like Matt Hardy would be the guy I'd be going crazy to get right now. I mean, if he could bring this level of creativity to shake up the brand a bit. I know it would never work in that environment, but man, put this Matt Hardy on like the 97 team with like Vince Russo and Raven or whatever the fuck was going on. It was like, you know, beautiful, beautiful magic of wrestling television. But, you know, this is what happens when you're a lifelong fan and you get to do whatever you want. I mean, this is the kind of shit you do. So, Steve, anything on your end?
This is what I love about life. This kind of stuff. It's just life in general. I love absurdity. That's why I like professional wrestling to begin with. And I am a guy who likes more of the solid matches and, you know, five-star classics and, you know, move-for-move holds and stuff like that. But, God, when this stuff is done right, it is just beautifully. And it can only be done in wrestling. I can't – you know, they kind of did it with, like, Sharknado maybe on a more – pop culture level, but this can only be done in wrestling. And again, thank goodness Matt and Jeff kind of decided, hey, you know what, we're going to kind of do our own thing, and they let him run with it. So as much as Impact and TNA, you know, get shit upon, we have to praise them for taking a chance like this. And hey, I have checked out TNA since this started.
And I'll say this, Aaron, the bar has officially been raised for the Christmas special this year. This is what you have to tell.
PTB, final deletion.
Yes,
we got to see if we got enough money in the budget to sign up Senior Benjamin.
All right. We got Matt Rotella. He's our Senior Benjamin. All right, guys. We've 40 minutes on Final Deletion feels like a perfect way to place to stop. So episode 2 has been a loaded episode. We talked a lot of stuff. We're going to be back in 2 weeks. We're going to have more guests. We'll continue probably talking about the Cruiserweight Classic. We'll definitely be past UFC, so we'll talk about that as well. We'll be after the draft. So a lot's going on in the next couple weeks leading up to our next show. So for all of the crew, for the Cowboy, Roger Morissette, for Aaron, for Glenn, for Hugh Little, and, of course, for Steve and Nate, I'm JT. We are out. Thank you for listening to Episode 2 of Clotheslines and Headlines. PlaceMediation.com. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter, and you can get all your updates. Be sure to visit each and every day. We have plenty of great podcasts and articles for your enjoyment. And, of course, sign up on iTunes. Until 2 weeks, we'll talk to you then. Take care.
And buy me a Senor Benjamin shirt.
Or he'll beat you into submission!
It's over!
Oh, shit. And the flames went higher, and it burns, 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 the ring of fire, the ring of fire. I fell. Love is sweet when hearts like ours meet. I felt